Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Everybody, to another edition of Leave It in the Ring Radio, my boxing fans' official radio show. It's kind of slow in boxing right now. I gotta say, there's not a whole lot to chop it up. I mean, there's some things in the works, and there are some things to, talk about, but it's kind of slowing down for us just for this little short moment. You know, we do got solo boxing kicking off tomorrow in Fairfield, California, which had a big success when they had Brandon Gonzalez out there and his when he headlined against Nestor Gonzalez. So they're doing it again in Fairfield, and then they're going to take it down to San Francisco, back over there at the Wharf, where they're going to have Marcito Gesta, No Mercy, the Filipino sensation, come out and debut in San Francisco. The last time I was in San Francisco for a fight was when Floyd Mayweather was facing Jesus El Manor Chavez, and on the undercard was Manny Pacquiao. And at that time, not a lot of folks knew who Manny Pacquiao was at that moment, and I had a chance to, which is kind of weird, it was kind of ironic if you really think about it. You know, Manny was on the undercard with Floyd Mayweather, and they really didn't think, I mean, they were both looking at each other, both at different stages of their careers. Who would ever thought that the media and fight fans and hardcore fight fans and everybody around the world be so focused on two guys that crossed paths at one time? I think it was back in, 2001 or something, 2002, when that happened in San Francisco. I don't remember. I think I still got my ticket because I had ringside. You know, I went out there to definitely watch the fight and support it, you know, and I was excited at that time because, you know what, it was in 2001 because it happened right after the 9/11. So now it takes me back memories. And at that time, HBO kind of got us a little bit excited, you know, especially for a fan like myself in that time, because there was not a whole lot of events. You know, we had the fight in the tank in San Jose, which, you know, Andre Ward did have a chance to fight out there, but wasn't fighting a whole lot at that time, you know. Let me bring in my host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother?
What's up, man? Sorry, I was lost in my story. I was sitting there writing away and looked at the clock and was like, "Oh shit, I gotta call on the radio."
So I was lost a little bit today on, you know, Twitter and a bunch of other stuff. I was actually chopping it up with a few folks on Facebook talking about boxing. There was a few topics that, you know, they were saying, hey, are you guys going to talk about this? You're going to talk about that? And I said, you know what, we're going to try to talk about everything that is happening for this past week and this week coming up here on Leave It in the Ring. That's a promise. We try to do that, you know. Real quick, I did put it up on Twitter that we are going to be adding a toll-free minutes for our listeners, you know, people that want to call in. There's a lot. We got a lot of fans that listen. You know, when I say fans, well, listeners that tune in from the UK or from Puerto Rico or Mexico, and they do email us on the Leave It in the Ring Gmail account saying, hey, you know, we'd like to call in, would want to call in, but it's just a little pricey for us to call in, you know, because it's such a long distant number. We're here based out of California, you know, the sunny state. And so what we're going to do is we're going to add on the toll-free. So it gives everybody the opportunity from around the world to call in and chop it up and stuff. A friend of ours, Travis No Doubt Trout, who won his title this past weekend, he's going to be calling in, chopping it up with us, with me and Gabriel, and his experience in Mexico. He's coming from New Mexico. He's going heading out. He had it out down in Mexico, hostile territory, because you know, he was going to the favorite's hometown to face him and win the title. He took it with a 12-round decision, and hear a little bit about how it underwent for him being out there, and what is next up for his career. What's going to happen next, you know? And then a little later, we should have Alex Zariza. There's a lot of rumors, you know, that's been looming around him. He should be able to get on Leaving the Ring. He's been on the show numerous times, right, Gabe? And should be able to clear up some rumors that's been kind of out there and stuff, you know? I didn't have a chance to watch the press conference. I don't know if you had a chance to do that. And you know what? We didn't even send anybody out from Leaving the Ring. I know we normally send people out to go and cover it and do some filming and get some interviews. But I dropped the ball on that one, Gabe. Got to admit it. I dropped the ball on that one, so I didn't get anybody out there.
I'm sure there's going to be plenty of hype trains for you to jump on regarding this fight. This probably won't be the last one. You know, there'll be media days. And I actually skipped it myself. I've been working on my story, making calls, not getting answers back from my calls. But Steve was out there actually covering it for Max Boxing. He kind of handled it. And I got to be perfectly honest. I really just didn't want to go down. I know it's my job to cover the sport. But one, we were covered. And two, I just don't want to sit there and hold a microphone up or a recorder up to hear Mosley tell me that he's going to win and Pacquiao's going to stand in front of him and come to him aggressively. That's not how Pacquiao fights. He's going to be aggressive, but he's going to be going in circles around Mosley. This is a 10-1 fight. And while it is, it's kind of a banner moment for the sport in that, you know, they're bringing in CBS and everything that's going forward with the Showtime deal and the Showtime / CBS deal. It is very important for our sport. At the same time, I don't know. This is kind of one of those fights where I'm not boycotting it. I think that's not silly, but it's not going to really do anything to boycott it. But I'm not going to waste a hell of a lot of time on it. I think there's more important things to write about. The thing that I'm writing about tonight, I felt, is much more important than doing an advanced story on a fight that's happening in May. So that's why I didn't go. You know, it's just kind of like I value my time a little bit more, and I just kind of look at it as they're going to be charging fans $50 or $60 probably in this case to see a fight that we already know the outcome to. What's exciting about that? Absolutely nothing. I mean, it says a lot that while this thing was going on, the thing that was trending the most on Twitter was Manny Pacquiao's haircut. Not the fight, not how it's going to turn out, but the fact that he looks a little like Justin Bieber. You know, I mean, that's just kind of, that says it all to me. You know, I don't think there's any mystery about this fight. I don't think any fans, there's a few that are like, oh, just you wait, you know, Shane's going to get him. I think there's actually like one guy that I know that's saying that. Other than that, everybody else knows what's going to happen here. So for me, I'm more intrigued by how they're going to advertise this on CBS, how many people that watch CBS and that new market of Showtime, how many of those people are going to be looped in or pulled in or sheeped in into seeing this fight. You know, I have more of a curiosity there. Sort of how Steve had the curiosity of going to Pontiac to see how many people weren't going to be there. I have a curiosity here how many people would be duped into buying this thing.
It's
a little cynical, I know, but...
It's funny because the whole Bieber fever. First off, I got to tell you, I've never heard this kid sing, you know, and a friend of ours that's from 48 Boxing was saying that they were standing in line with their knee, I believe, for tickets. And I said, and I had to be honest, I said, you know what, I've never heard this guy's, any of his music. Maybe it's because I keep listening to good music nowadays. You know, the music of the past that I grew up on and stuff. I don't know, I just can't really find myself to kind of get in tune with the stuff that are popping now with some of the kids that are bumping in their vehicles and stuff. But then again, my father and everybody else used to cringe at us when we used to listen to, you know, Poor Righteous Teachers and, you know, Kumo D and all these other guys and stuff. So I can understand, you know, getting up in age, our taste does change, but I just got to look at it, and just to me, a lot of the stuff that they do is recycled. But hey, this is not about a music show. This is about a boxing show.
but one last thing. Good is good, Dave. You're right. You're absolutely right. Don't let yourself say, I'm getting old and I might not know what's cool.
I'm not getting old, baby.
The kid's balls haven't dropped yet. I mean, he's like a one-man New Kids on the Block. I mean, it's what's good is good. And the music that we liked that our parents were afraid of and that their parents were afraid of when they were listening had balls, and Justin Bieber doesn't appear to. So you're absolutely right. Don't let anybody tell you different.
No, you know what?
Let's get some boxing.
Yeah, let's get right back into boxing here. You know, a lot of fight fans from Leaving the Ring that tune in and follow us and communicate with us on a daily basis and stuff, immediately when this fight was announced, which is Marcos El Chino Miranda accepts the fight with Eric Morales. He's confirmed it. It's going to be at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas. It's a done deal, okay? It's going to be popping off on, why am I saying that word? April 9th. Okay, it's going to be going down between Madonna and the legend Eric Morales. A lot of fight fans disappointed or wondering why is this fight happening? Leaving in the ring. Can you let us know? Give you guys his opinion. What do you guys think? What do you think is Golden Boy trying to maneuver in front of us? What do you think they're trying to wave around us? Get around the fact that he should have probably got a rematch with Khan, or he should have got it with Timothy Bradley, or possibly a rematch with Victor Ortiz. You know, this kind of hit me right away. I really don't know what to think of it at this particular moment. It's just to say, wow, Morales, you know, from Khan to Morales. Morales, I understand, but I just haven't seen anything for Morales to really tell us that he's completely back and he's definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with. I don't really find that there. I just pretty much, I know,
because it isn't.
Yeah, they're pretty much just building off of his name, you know what I mean, which has been done numerous times in the sport of boxing. That's how you build superstars, you know, and that's probably what Golden Boy is looking at. They're looking at, well, you know what, Top Rank has done a fantastic job in doing stuff like that. But the difference here is, to me, Gabriel, and I might be wrong about this, and you may have a different of opinions of what I'm going to say here, but the difference between what Top Rank, they build their fighters facing, you know, fighters that are almost on their way out, is that they still have a little bit of a chance, you know? And it's not the obvious, you know? They still have a fall, or that fighter's been a little bit consistent. Morales hasn't been. You know, he's kind of back in. He's been back since last year. And you think about the names he's been in with, and I'll tell you what, you can't really think of them off the top of your head. You know? It's like, yeah, he's back. Oh, he was back? Oh, who did he fight? I don't know, but he won. And that's the problem there. You know, where then you look at El Chino, yes, he's getting an old warrior. Yes, he's getting a name to be put in there against. But if you're a real fight fan, if you're a hardcore fight fan, like right now, and you're tuning in, listening to Leave the Ring, we all know, man, this is not a fight for Madonna to build up his credibility. I don't know. I could be wrong, Gabe. What do you think?
You're not wrong. It's a fight, you know, I mean, I've seen the last, you know, the comeback fights of Eric Morales, and I wouldn't say he looks shot. He's definitely shop-worn. I mean, he's had a ton of wars. He's old. He's never really fought as a welterweight, much less a 140-pounder. I mean, these fights have been at those weights, but it's more like, you know, he's kind of been saying, I'm kind of trimming down each fight. I don't want to just kill my body and come right back to lightweight. You know, he wanted to kind of slowly work himself down. And, I mean, this is a big-money fight for him. They'll probably get a really good payday. And it's a good comeback fight for Marcos Maidana, who lost a tough one. But let's just be perfectly honest. In terms of, you know, I mean, all time wise, you know, Marcos Maidana, his skills can't hold a candle to Eric Morales. But this isn't the 90s. This is 2011. And
right.
In this day and age, Marcos Maidana is a very dangerous fight for a guy like Eric Morales. It's a big step up in class. Yeah, Eric can box well, and he's boxing, you know, a little bit more than he used to in the past. But he's also, you know, he's going the distance with Jose Alfaro and Francisco Lorenzo. And they're tough fights where he's got to take more punches than he would like in order to get that win. You know, granted, I mean, even the Lorenzo fight was close. You know, one judge had it 114-113, another one had it 115-112. That's not a completely dominant win. And you're fighting Francisco freaking Lorenzo, you know, who's a spoiler and a tough guy. He went, you know, the distance with Soto in that rematch. But you know, at the same time, to me, it's all it is Golden Boy is getting a win off of a name. And I'm not, you know, going to go on a limb and say he stops Eric Morales, but he probably will. I mean, if he lands enough of those hard shots, I mean, he's got legitimate power, and he's a real 140-pounder, as opposed to Eric Morales, who's old and has kind of moved into that weight because he's old, not because his body grew and he naturally is now a junior welterweight, and he can actually bring his skills and his assets, like power and speed,
right,
up to that weight. He's just kind of a dead man walking, in a sense, in this. And I didn't have a huge problem with Marquez getting it on with Morales, because they're both older guys that have been in wars, and they're kind of from the same era, and I would like to see them fight each other. You know, I'll be perfectly honest. It might not be the best fight in the world, but to me, this fight is very, very dangerous. And you know, you're going to have the commission in Las Vegas is going to pass this fight. They're going to okay it. And you got to kind of question why that happens. I mean, this isn't the biggest travesty in the world. There's more. It's one of the stories, a story that I'm working on right now. But it's up there. You know, you kind of look at it and you go, this is a, you know, with Morales and Marquez, that's two older guys. And Marquez has been showing some wear and tear and some vulnerability because of the higher weight. But Maidana just took on one of the fastest 140 pounders, one of the fastest fighters in the world, and almost knocked him out late. What's he going to do with slow-footed Eric Morales? Probably knock him out in about 8 rounds.
Yeah,
it's a recipe for disaster, in my opinion.
And you know what? The thing is this, too. You know, some fight fans that adore Eric Morales, trust me, I'm a huge Eric Morales fan. Always loved everything that he does when he comes into the ring. And we're not undermining the fact that this was a great warrior. You know, his legacy was definitely sealed, you know, and making this comeback, does it damage it? Of course, but it's not going to erase the things that he has done in the past in the ring, okay? But and we're not saying it's not going to be competitive. It is going to be competitive because you can't take away everything that Eric Morales is able to bring. I mean, he does bring intelligence. He is a smart guy. But at times, you could still see, even his last fights of his comeback, he's very slow-footed, like you mentioned right now here, Gabe. And he tends to still want to brawl. He has the mentality of the fighter. You hit me, I'm going to hit you back. When you got a slow guy like Marcos El Chino, who's not the fastest cat in the world, okay, and you want to decide and trade, this is a very heavy-handed person. And let's not forget, a much bigger man than a lot of foes that Eric Morales has been in the ring with. A big 140, in fact. A very big 140.
I can't think of, well, I guess the last really big hitter that Eric Morales faced was Manny Pacquiao. And
right.
He got knocked out in 3 rounds. You know, I was at that fight. And you know, before that he got TKO'd in 10. And you can really see him kind of slide off the, you know, slide down the mountain. When he took on David Diaz, he did look like a shot fighter. I mean, he struggled with that guy. And you know, arguably won. But still, you know, he announced his retirement like right after the fight. And maybe he needed a break. But at this point, you kind of look at him and say, well, maybe he also needed the money. You know, to me, it didn't make any sense. It wasn't like any of us ever wondered, you know, I wonder who's better, Eric Morales or Marcos Maidana. That's a fight I'd like to see. Like, it just kind of came out of nowhere to me. And really, all it is you can sell it. You know, people are going to have a morbid curiosity. They're going to want to see Morales. He's got a lot of fans. You know, there's one fan hitting me on Twitter, like, what do you think of that fight? He's one of my all-time favorite fighters. And it's like, well, you know, I love Eric Morales, too. I was always more of a Morales guy than a Marco Antonio Barrera guy. But, you know, the facts are facts. That when he started going downhill, he went down fast. And sure, he's training, and he seems pretty dedicated to his training at this point, but that doesn't make him a junior welterweight or able to take a punch from a guy like Marcos Maidana at this point. I mean, he hasn't really faced guys, you know, that are big knockout punchers in his comeback. And still, he's kind of struggled to beat them. It's going to be kind of an interesting fight, but, I mean, is there really any evidence to say he's ready for this or he should do this? I mean, I wasn't upset with him coming back. For me, it was like looking at the guys he was facing was kind of like that victory tour or that farewell tour. And if he did happen to get a fight with like a Marquez, that fight kind of made sense to me. A fight with Manny Pacquiao makes no sense to me. And a fight really with any of the elite 140-pounders makes zero sense to me for them and for him. You know, I'd rather see Marcos, you know, who's competitive and losing, you know, get back in there with Khan or maybe, you know, do what everybody wants Khan to do, which is fight Brady Prescott. Why not go after that fight? Knock him out. And then say, well, okay, you didn't want to fight him. I fought him. I knocked him out. He knocked you out. Let's revisit this thing. Kind of move yourself into a position. But at the same time, Golden Boy has both fighters, so it doesn't really benefit them. You know, they'd rather have him. They don't have Brady Prescott, but they have, you know, they have Maidana and they have Khan. They can kind of wait around with those pieces until
Weigh that out and make that a much further, bigger fight. And I think that's really, in all honesty, that's what they're doing. Put Morales in there before Marquez, okay? Let Marquez kind of, you know, recoup from his last war with Casitas, you know, and then they build from there. Hey, I'm not going to knock out your hustle and stuff, but In plain view, it's not a very good fight, you know. The fight that I do like is Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who's going to get a shot at Michael Casidas, okay? Now, Michael Casidas coming off of a loss, but the guy's just so valiant. I mean, the guy's such a warrior. He comes to fight. Guerrero's heart's always been in question, even though I have not questioned it, when he had turned away from Jordan from the headbutt, and when the doctor asked him, you know, can you see, he said no, the doctor waved it off. Fight fans have not forgotten about that. Fight fans have not really, truly, honestly, have forgiven for him for doing that back at the HB Pavilion in San Jose, California. So getting in with Casitas, a guy that's all, you know, in your chest, all-out type of style fighter, what are we going to get from Guerrero? We're going to get the boxer, the guy that looks far much bigger than Vicente Escobedo, who he fought back over there in New Jersey on the Judah card. Are we going to get a bigger Robert? No. I think we're going to have an equal size, both fighters, sizable fighters, stepping in and facing each other. The pressure of Casitas is definitely going to make Robert stand and trade. It's something we haven't seen Robert do since he was back at 126. And since moving up in weight, he has become more of a boxer, what he did start off in the beginning of his career. I like this fight. It's a toss-up for me, but I'm going to go with Robert Guerrero. I think the cuts and bruises that Casitas has been showing and the wear and tear in the wars that he's been in with Gabriel, I just don't see him really pulling it off right now at this moment.
No, I don't either. You know, I just think, you know, the style really benefits Robert Guerrero. Although, you know, if you look at, and it's a different style, but the Casamayor fight, he does have a tendency to, you know, and even his last fight with the Vicente Escobedo, he starts fast, but he does level off. And if he's not able to take care of Casitas early or in the middle rounds, and Casitas is still there and hasn't taken too much damage, he's got power late, and I think he could be a problem. You know, that pressure is going to make Robert work a lot. I think it's a hell of a fight. I'm really excited about it because I don't think it's a 50-50 fight, but it's a great action fight. Anything can happen. You know, Robert's been down before. He's been hurt before. And Casitas has got real power. And he's a legitimate tough guy. And that you're gonna have to go through some hell in order to get him out of there. And he dealt with, you know, for the most part, early on at least, he was able to deal with Marquez and some of, you know, in his boxing and his movement. And I don't think that, you know, Robert's on that level of a Marquez in terms of his skill. So I think, you know, the flaws of both and the attributes of both are going to make for a really exciting, really, really good fight. I can't wait to see it.
Well, this is the thing why I say it's more of a 50-50, in my opinion, because, well, you're right, absolutely right. It's not a complete 50-50, but it sure can edge towards a 50-50, just because the fact that Robert, really honestly, has he been with a really big puncher like Casitas? Has he really been in with a guy that's just going to come forward and doesn't know any other gear? Is he going to – and you got to admit, Casitas' feet is a lot quicker than we give him credit for. He does close in the gap. We saw that with the slow-footed Marquez. You know, Robert has been a guy that's been able to really show us a variety of what he can do in the ring. He can box. He can brawl. But when he does brawl, it's been with much smaller opponents. Casitas is not that small to me. You know, I think he's going to bring the best out of Robert. And it could really, honestly, I agree with you, Gabriel, about the fact that he's not in the Marquez level, but with a Casitas, it could definitely help him in building his way into becoming a Marquez level. It makes him a little bit more intelligent. He can go back and look at the fight because he's going to make a lot of mistakes with the Casitas fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Casitas is the kind of guy that will take advantage of your mistakes, and he'll also kind of force you into some mistakes, kind of corral you with his pressure, and he'll be right there, and he's going to force you to trade. And, you know, Robert is an aggressive-minded fighter for the most part, and when you pressure him like that, he will respond, and that may play against him. He really should be the boxer in this, more of the boxer-puncher, and kind of, you know, lead Casitas into traps, kind of get him to kind of follow around as opposed to cutting off the ring, which, you know, Casitas kind of vacillates between the two. Sometimes he's sliding off to the, you know, either the left or the right and trapping you and then going to work on your body. And other times he can kind of fall into this pattern where he's just kind of following you around and eating shots, waiting to throw that big one. It's going to be incumbent on him to remain a pressure fighter and an effective one, and Robert is going to have to turn him and burn him and, you know, keep throwing 1, 2, 3, slip out to the side, throw more, get out of there. He can't get greedy in this fight, because if Robert gets greedy and sticks around, he could get knocked out or he could get dropped. You know,
definitely.
It's both their flaws and their strengths make this is excellent matchmaking in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, I like this fight. It's definitely a fan-friendly fight. It's definitely a fight that if you're one of those guys that are saying, well, boxing's dead and boxing is this and la, 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 you're going to find out how fast it can be revived. It's definitely a fight that you're going to sit there. Even with Madonna and Morales, it's going to be a one-sided fight, but you're going to be treated to a fight that can definitely make you forget about the one-sided, you know, event where you're going to see a back-and-forth fight with two guys. Casillas, you can't count him out. He's definitely a guy that's going to be in the pocket. He's definitely a guy that's going to be there. You know, he has true grit. He's going to definitely come up and show, hey, you got a great storyline. I got a great storyline. We both make great storylines in the ring, and I'm excited about it. I can't wait for it to come down.
It's almost kind of like what happened with the fourth fight between Marquez and Vasquez. And everybody went because it was kind of nostalgia. We wanted to see these guys one last time. And, you know, they'd been in great fights together before. But really, everybody knew that the real fight that was happening was the co-feature in Agbeko and Matos. And that was the fight we were all going to actually see because we knew that one would be competitive. It's kind of this situation here where it's a little bit of a crossroads, too, because Robert wants to be mentioned in that elite level. He wants to be on that upper echelon and not have people, you know, laugh or blow him off or be able to run from him when he
right.
says, I want Marquez or, you know, I want this guy or that guy. And this is that kind of fight that can do that for him. When you have a common opponent, you know, the onus is on you to do better than the guy you're chasing. So the onus is on him to look spectacular against Katsidis, control him, not get knocked down by him like Marquez did, and get him out of there sooner. You know, so, and for Katsidis, he's coming off that loss, and he still wants to be in the title picture, you know, and remain a viable fighter. So his job is to get Guerrero out of there. And when you have two guys that are fighting for something like that, and there's probably no rematch clause or HBO hasn't guaranteed them fight dates, you're going to see these two guys risk. You're not going to see them get cut and say, I've had enough. You're going to, you know, and I know Robert had that happen before, but he's since vindicated himself by fighting through pain and cuts and all kinds of things.
Yeah, he's fought through a broken shoulder, you know. He's been a hostile territory. He's been in Denmark. This is Robert is truly, he really does fit his last name, which is Warrior. He does fit. I know a lot of fight fans really honestly crucify him, and some fight fans will say, well, Dave, you know him. But you know what? Not knowing the person and knowing what his career is about, you got to dig a little bit deeper. This guy fought for the title, which he could have not have went to when his wife was under surgery. You know, she's, you know, and the story of his wife, if you don't really know, go back and check it out. You know, his wife has been through so much chemotherapy. You know, she's been on the brink of passing away. There's a lot of stuff that's been going on with Robert, and this kid still keeps coming forward. And the thing about Casillas too, the thing I like about Casillas here, Gabriel, is in the beginning, HBO tried to label him as the Arturo Gatti, the new Arturo Gatti, and him losing and still coming back. And now with his brother, you know, passing away, rest in peace and everything, he surely is living up to that name because he's not going away. And he's definitely given us another fight worthy of sitting down and being excited about. Going in with Marquez, going in with Juan Diaz. This guy doesn't stop. He continues to come forward. He continues to say, you know what, I lost, no biggie. He doesn't come in with the mentality of a loser. He comes in with a mentality of, I'm here to break your face, win or lose.
Yeah, that's all you really can ask for from a fighter is a guy that's going to, you know, both guys are going to come forward and attack each other. I mean, I think, like I said before, you know, Robert's going to have to adjust his game just a little bit, not to play straight into, you know, straight to Katsidis' game. But if he doesn't listen to my advice, which, you know, a professional fighter shouldn't, we're going to have a great fight. I mean, this could be a Gotti Ward type of fight. you know, where both guys give no quarter, and we get to find out the depth of both of them. I mean, I think we've, at least on some level, you know, particularly with Katsidas, we've seen how far he will go to win a fight. You know, he's be cut and knocked down, and the guy's just, you can hit him with a bat, and he still keeps coming. And I think, you know, but there's a potential in these styles for them to spontaneously combust and both just kind of explode, and we get great fireworks. I mean, it's not pure boxer versus puncher. You know, it's two guys that box a little bit to get their punching done. And that's always going to be a good thing because they're looking to punch first and box second. So, like I said, I think it's just a tremendous fight. I was really excited to hear about that fight, you know, happening because the beginning of the year has been a little slow, but coming into this next quarter is looking like we're going to get some pretty good action fights, you know, along with what we're hearing about, you know, Andre Berto taking on Victor Ortiz, which I don't care what anybody says, that's a good fight. It's a really good fight.
I'm going to move on a little bit too. I'm over here having a candy in my mouth, and that's not going to work. I'm over here having a Jolly Rancher. Yeah, it's just not going to work here, Gabe. I got to take it out.
You got to bring enough for the class, first off.
There you go. Well, it looks like it is starting to sound a little bit. After Manny Pacquiao vacating his WBC belt, Alvarez at Canelo and Matthew Hatton will be fighting for the vacant title. That's what it looks like. Golden Boy seems like that they're communicating with the WBC office, requesting the approval for the March 5th fight between Hatton and Alvarez, which is happening in Anaheim Honda Center in California. What does that lead up to? That's what some fight fans are wondering. Okay, they fight for the vacancy of the bout that Manny said, you know what, I'm not going to defend the title here at 154. Don't plan to move up at 154. I'm going to stay with the lower weights. What does it lead for if Canelo gets a hold of it? Well, that's a pretty good question. Now, whether or not Canelo holds, I mean, he's definitely going to hold on to it, but what he does with it is something that we're going to have to foresee. You know, Jose Suleiman, who's the president of the WBC, only asks for you to defend it with your mandatory fights that he requests. He'll strip it from you if you don't. He'll ask for it back if you decide to just kind of sit on it. But if you're looking to see a Sergio Martinez and Canelo Alvarez, you know what? I've had some pretty bad dreams, and they've woken me up pretty quick. And trust me, I don't think Alvarez wants a nightmare going his way with Sergio Martinez. So I think we shouldn't even put those names together at this particular moment because Canelo has, rightfully so, he's having Matthew Hatton. Let the kid still build. I wouldn't want to put him up with a Sergio Martinez at this moment. And yes, giving him a title, guess what? Andre Berto has a title, and we all know he's a title holder. He's not a champion.
That's the thing. I mean, this. I think I talked about this about 2-3 weeks ago on the show, and I said this is going to happen. And you know, the wheels were kind of in place, and sure enough, it did. You know, and you know, it's a Mexican belt. You know, the WBC, and he's the biggest Mexican star right now. You know, Julio Cesar Chavez is right there with him. But you know, Canelo is a guy that I think is going to blow up in the next few years, and Golden Boy hopes to. Have that happen. That's why they're bringing him to Anaheim. You know, it's large Hispanic population. They want him to be a crossover star. He's learning English. He's got that kind of that rare look, red hair and freckles, kind of looks like a white guy. You know, doesn't exactly fight like a Mexican. He fights with the heart of a Mexican. But it's got kind of more an athletic style, a slicker style than your average Mexican. And so he kind of, I don't know, he's kind of perfect there to be a crossover star. What this does for him, for boxing, for him to get a belt, it's kind of similar to what happened with Andre Berto, which is a good example that you brought up. Same belt, the WBC belt, and Andre got it when Floyd vacated it. What this does is it makes it so that he doesn't have to deal with the other champions. He doesn't have to deal with, you know, Sergey Zinjerik, who might be letting his belt go at WBO. He doesn't have to deal with Alfred Angulo or Miguel Cotto or Bundridge. You know, or Rigoberto Alvarez, you know, or rather Austin Trout, who took that belt away. He just has to deal with his own mandatories. Now, the problem is his mandatory, but he hasn't been elevated to this status, is going to be Alfred Angulo. So he may have to deal with him. Next after that is Paul Williams, who, you know, Steve Kim is actually reporting, has got an HBO date April 30th. So we'll see how long Saul is. One, we'll either see how long it is before they step him up, where he's got to fight a mandatory like this, or we see how long it takes for the WBC to either make him some sort of other kind of champion, the silver champion or the purple champion, so that he doesn't have to fight one of these guys and they acquiesce to the fighter, or we'll see them strip him, and Paul Williams and Alfred Angulo will be mandated to fight for that belt, and we'll see if that actually happens. It's going to be very interesting, because the WBC seems to have different rules for different people. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Manny Pacquiao held that belt inactive without making a decision for a long time, and then when he did decide to fight at 147, you know, against Shane Mosley, we didn't see them really move on taking his belt away until he said something. So it's kind of like society. You know, rich people have different rules, and the guys that are watching have a different set of rules. And, you know, look what they did with Sergio Martinez, taking his belt away, you know, so fast. And they stripped him when he was put in a position by HBO that was really, there was nothing he could really do. You know, I mean, Sergio wanted to fight his mandatory, Sebastian Zivic. HBO turned it down. So he was kind of stuck. So I lose the belt, or I lose my date on HBO to go take care of this mandatory defense. What is he going to do? He keeps his HBO belt, essentially, and loses the WBC belt. You don't really see the WBC treating Manny Pacquiao that way, or even Floyd Mayweather, who they made him a champion emeritus. So they keep an emeritus champion at 147 and 154, meaning he can fight for the title any time he damn well pleases.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it opens up a lot of questions. You know, are the belts, you know, meaningful? Or the, you know, what do they mean? Do we need them? All kinds of things. You know, or should we just get rid of corrupt sanctioning bodies or allegedly corrupt sanctioning bodies like the WBC and kind of melt it all down into one? I'm not sure, you know, if that's really the solution, but it's certainly something where you can kind of look at it and say, okay, you can't see the suitcase of money changing hands, but you can watch the behavior and see that it's a lot suspect. Not a little, but a lot suspect.
You know what? You're right. It's the really quick. I believe we have our first guest here on Gable who just won his title. Austin No Doubt Trout. What's up, brother? You're on live right now.
Hey,
leave
what's
the
up?
Ring.
How
you
doing,
man?
Man?
I'm doing good, bro.
I'm doing great right now. I can't even explain right now what I'm doing.
I heard, man. I heard after the win and stuff, you were out there, you know, pounding a couple of tequilas, talking Spanish to everybody and everything.
I tried.
You know, I campeón. Yo, mi, el campeón. So, man.
Todo mundo, the world.
So, let's talk a little bit about your experience there. You know, you had to go down. You know, when we had you on leaving the ring, you said, look, I got to go to his territory. You know, some of us felt you're going to have to really, really take it away from him. And that's exactly what you did. You went out there and you took it to him. I spoke to a couple other writers. They said, you know what, I didn't give the other guy a round. You know, Trout, it was all of you. You controlled it and stuff. How good did it feel to know everything was swaying your way, but at the end of the day, you still had to listen to the judges' decisions.
Right. And I was listening very carefully. I knew I had it. When that 12 bell rung, when the final bell rung, you know, I was trying to walk back to the corner block, and all I could do was fall to my knees because I knew I just got over a huge hurdle in my career. And, I was a little bit nervous, but, you know, I was assured that I had fair judges and that they wouldn't rob me. Just, you know, do my job and don't worry about the judges. Don't worry about the crowd. I'll be okay. So, I mean, I was a little worried, but I wasn't too worried. I had some real good assurance, you know, from my promoter, and we got the fair chance. That's all we asked for.
Yeah, you did. You know, and now that you have this title here, And you know, I know automatically nothing's really discussed, you know. You're still kind of going off the fumes of the excitement of that you just, you know, what you accomplished
right
at this moment and stuff. But you have to kind of sit back because you were out of the game for a minute. Now you're back. But you have to now sit back and go, okay, I'm back into it. I got myself in this position by gaining the title. Where do I go to? What do I go to now? Because you obviously had to have a plan if you won this title.
Yeah, you know, I told, you know, my promoter, Greg Cohen of Empire, promotion and said, all right, let's get right back to work. You know, that layoff business, I did that already. I don't want to take no more time off. You know, I wanted to shake off some rust and, you know, get right back to it and get sharp as I go. And, you know, we was hoping that we would get the attention of, you know, maybe Canelo Alvarez or even Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. or even Cotto Mayorga, which, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath for, but, you know, all these opportunities, you know, the sky's the limit right now. But something with Saul would be great. You know, it's a good story. I beat up his big brother, and now I'm ready to take it to the little more talented brother.
That would be great. I mean, they're talking about him receiving the vacant WBC that Manny Pacquiao left out there behind, and I think that would be great. Let me introduce my co-host, Gable Montoya from Max Boxing. Go ahead, Gable, and ask a question, brother.
Hey, Gable.
I'm doing good, Austin. How you doing? Well, obviously, you're doing great, but you actually just lived up to your nickname of No Doubt, because you just left
No Doubt
with this guy. 119, 108 across the board. What was it like being in that... being in that kind of environment? I mean, are you used to fighting in hostile territory?
Yeah. In 2009, I kind of went on the road and went into a lot of people's backyards. And I had some experience in the amateurs as well, fighting on the U.S. elite team. And that was actually at the time when everybody hated the United States. So everywhere we went, you know, we was booed and hissed at. But surprisingly, the people in Guadalajara, they weren't too vicious. You know, they actually showed a lot of love and embrace. They just, you know, are excited to have fighters around. And it wasn't until, you know, the night of the fight where I got booed. And midway through the fight, they actually turned into cheers. And that in itself, you know, I was like, I must be winning, you know, hands down.
Is there, I mean, besides winning, is there a better feeling for you than doing that, than going in and it's hostile and then coming out and everybody loves you?
You know, I can't really match anything that feels like this. I'm looking forward to making a better feeling out of it, like becoming undisputed, undefeated champion. Right now, you know, this is my euphoria. I haven't even woken up from this dream yet.
Now, you got some pretty big names. Other than, you know, Zinzurich has actually moved up to 160. He's fighting Martinez. But you got Miguel Cotto right there. And then you've also got, you know, Saul Alvarez is going to get that belt should he beat Matthew Hatton, which he probably will. But then there's another guy, Cornelius Bundridge, who's out there.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that's probably the path of least resistance in terms of the promoters? Do you think that's a fight that you could make happen?
I think it's definitely a fight that could happen. I would hope for it to happen. You know, I'm trying to, like I said, to be undisputed. And what a way to start off my legacy by getting two belts in two fights.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan to me. I mean, I imagine, though, you know, that camp may want to milk it a little bit. You know, a guy gets a belt, and they start to immediately make a little bit more money. They have more to lose, you know, in that belt. So they start
right.
to avoid. In the case of that, I mean, because you had that kind of inactivity a few while to get back, do you think it's more important for you to just fight if you can't
yes.
make the big unification fights, but just get in there and let us see more of you as much as possible?
Yes, exactly, because, you know, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the belt that I just won because, you know, dang it, Ali fought Sonny Liston for the same title. But, you know, with all the belts that they have nowadays, they're kind of losing, I guess I would say, the value, but in a lot of the fans' eyes, I have a lot to prove in my career. And I agree with them, you know, I know what I have, so that's why I have no doubt in my capabilities. But the people don't. And now I have this belt, you know, I'm praying that I get these good fights so I can prove, you know, that I should be champion.
You know, you said...
Exactly. Oh, go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned a little bit about Alvarez's big brother. When did that fight happen? When did that kick off?
Well, that's who I beat for the championship, his big brother.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking of somebody else.
I didn't realize that was his brother. Does he have red hair, too?
No, he doesn't. Like a ginger Hispanic guy. That's one for the book.
That's kind of a trip. I kind of spaced that. I did not know that was his brother.
Somebody,
no, you know what? I thought you had beat his brother before this fight, but I didn't know that this was his brother. See?
Yes, sir.
You
oh man,
so bad it feels like twice. You know.
Yeah.
The WBA belt is the oldest belt. It's the oldest sanctioning body out of all of them. It does have it's a really long history, and a lot of people will kind of criticize and say, you know, the belts are meaningless and there's too many belts and you know all manner of different arguments. For you as
right.
a fighter that's been kind of struggling to get known, get your name out of there. What is getting a belt besides just you know I'm finally validated as a world champion? What does it mean to you?
It means you know it opens up a huge door of opportunities. That's what the belt means, and not to mention that I've been dreaming about you know being the world champion since I was. You know, 10 years old, but times have changed since then. And even though if I was to quit today, I do consider my career being a success, you know, not too bad, undefeated world champion. But am I satisfied with where I'm at in my career? Not at all. I'm far from it. You know, I would like to be known as number one, to be on all the message boards and then can't nobody say a bad thing about me. Like, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't care if I like him or not. That boy's good.
Yeah, definitely. Well, man, you know, hey, we just want to keep wishing you the best of luck, brother, and we hope that you get a shot. I mean, if Saul Canelo, the younger brother of the older brother you just beat, gets that title over Hatton, it only makes sense, and it also makes
yeah.
a pretty good story. You know what I mean? You beat his older brother, you should get a shot at him, who a lot of people are looking at as the future Mexican star, and they're trying to build
right.
him up over here. I say it only makes a lot of sense, but like Gabriel was saying, I don't know. They might want to have him kind of hold off a little bit, so you might have to put in a little bit more work before you get that shot.
Well, I'm not going to wait for anybody. I'll go and I'll fight wherever I need to, you know. If somebody wants to take my belt and they're willing to do it over in Australia or something, then I'll go get that fight there. You know, I'm trying to stay as busy as I can, like I said, and now I'm in the driver's seat where I don't have to wait. I don't have to sit. I'm not mandatory for nobody. I mean, Cotto doesn't have to defend his belt for another 18 months, but I'm not waiting for that.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I'm definitely
going
to stay as busy as I can, and if they ever figure out that they want to come and try to take this belt or the belts I do end up getting, then we could talk. If you're trying to wait, then I'm on to the next one.
Yeah, no, you definitely can't stay stale. There's no way, you know.
I think with Alvarez, especially if he starts to get tape of you, and I'm getting tape of your fight this week, apparently.
All right.
I just have to think that you know, I mean this in the best possible way, that Alvarez is going to, you know, stay away from the brothers and pretty much just fight the others, you know, at this point. I don't see him getting in with somebody that's got athleticism that's slick, that has power and speed and skill. On
yeah,
top
would be smart.
Yeah.
It would be
no
smart
doubt.
Move.
Hey, no
but,
doubt.
I mean,
That's just my thinking. It's just, I mean, look who
no,
they're putting
agree.
Him in with.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it works, but hey, hopefully so. Hopefully they're not listening to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not taking
right.
their advice.
No, they only listen to the negative things I say, and then they email me angrily. So, you know, but I think it's refreshing to hear you say, and I think it is very important for you to just keep chopping the tree down. You know, keep letting us see you, get on TV as much as possible, and you know, and just you know, take down your mandatories until these guys can't ignore you. That seems to be the only way anymore. You know.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of using this belt as a loudspeaker. Like, can you hear me now? They don't want to fight.
Right,
yeah.
Right, you know. Well, that you know, that's the thing is that a lot of people, they really bag on the belts. They say, you know, we only need a belt. But, you know, Travis, in all honesty, this belt gives you a little bit of leverage to try to get these fights and get in there with these bigger names, because now you have something of value to say, well, look, I got this belt. You want this one too?
Right.
Fight me, you know.
Right.
And that's the way sometimes, you know, that's the way sometimes we have to, you know, get to the cookie. You know what I mean?
I agree.
So, you know, I definitely want to see you back in. I'm just hoping that they put you on maybe like a show box or you know, boxing after dark, you know, just to get to see a little bit more, get a little bit more exposure. You know, I have to get your fight here because I didn't have a chance to watch it, you know. I got highlights about it, but I didn't get to watch the whole thing. I want to watch everything that you did in that particular fight.
Well, yeah, man. Check it out. Let me know what you think. I felt a little rusty at first, but I just felt now, you know, I'm all excited now. I just dusted that off. I'm ready to get back to work.
Yeah,
so,
I'll
show people my best.
I know Mario said that he's going to send me something down, so I'll get on that after the show and talk to him a little bit, and maybe he can send it ASAP. Where I think I'm going to end up seeing him tomorrow in Fairfield, California stuff. But hey, brother, hey, thanks for calling in, man, and talking to us, and let us know.
Keep us updated.
Keep us updated what's going on with your career. What's up up on the agenda?
Okay, most definitely. God bless you guys.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
You take care, man. Congratulations.
And thank you again.
You know, no doubt Austin Trout, you know, gets his shot over there. And you know, that's the thing, too, is that he gets his shot out over there in the other side of the border. And even though we had him on, I completely forgot about that fight there, and I didn't even have a chance to really witness it. You know, I got highlights from it. Red sent me some highlights of the fight because we're going to have him on Leaving in the Ring and stuff. But I got the wrong info. I thought it was he had fought Canelo's brother before that, and I never really bothered to look at the name of who Travis Trout was boxing. So that's my bad. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna do that again.
There was a ton of fights last weekend, and that was actually the one that I had trouble getting a hold of, a feed for it or a copy of it. But I finally took somebody down that had it, and they're actually sending it to me. So it was actually the one fight I was really looking forward to, because Trout's kind of been under the radar.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's a guy that I've seen and thought this guy should be bigger than he is, and then he had all the managerial issues, and he kind of just sat on the shelf. But he was a guy that was kind of right there and that people were touting as, this guy's no joke. He's gonna do some things. And then he just kind of stalled, and I actually kind of had forgotten. And then, you know, all of a sudden he kind of popped right back up with Empire, and here he is. And what I like is just the refreshing attitude. He's not kind of calling out these other guys. He understands the reality of where he's at. But like he said, this is like an advertisement. This is a loudspeaker for him. I've got a belt. I'm here. I'm legit. And let's do some things. And it'd be interesting to see who answers that call. Like I said, you know, with Alvarez, and really with Berto, if you look at it, it was almost the smartest move for him. Rather than staying a contender where he could become a mandatory in several different divisions and have to take somebody tough on to get that belt, they moved him right into a vacant belt, and he's never really had to defend it too hard other than, you know, the Colazzo fight and to some extent the Quintana fight. Everything else, all 10, you know, all the other 8 times he's been on HBO, they've been against guys that he was going to beat. So in a way, getting a belt is kind of a way of protecting a fighter nowadays. Because if the sanctioning body kind of acquiesces to the powers that run that guy's career, they're never really going to force the issue with him. You know, here we are again, him fighting a guy that's coming up from 140 as opposed to, I don't know, somebody in his own division. You know, kind of interesting. Otherwise, I still like that fight.
You know, the thing, too, with Austin, no doubt, Trout, getting this title belt here is, you mentioned earlier, Alfredo Angulo, you know, him still being in 154. You still got James Kirtland. And Austin, in the position that he's, you know, right now he did mention Canelo, which I got to – and he was realistic about it. Like, hey, listen, I think you're right. I'm not gonna get that fight, but I'd like to get that fight. I just fought his brother. It makes out to be a great storyline, you know. If Golden Boy would want to build on that, they would use like, hey, he beat the older brother. Now it's the younger brother to avenge the loss. But Trout does have a title, and he does have stars out there that are looking to make their comeback slowly but surely. You got Danny Jacobs still, who's at 160, but there's been some little bit of talk, and you could probably clarify this here, Gable, if he's going to come back, if he wants to come back. Then you still got James Kirtland. You got Alfredo Angulo, who's been missing in action for some time, who, if he's looking to get himself in a position where he can force a Canelo fight, not force it, but to make it even juicier, he goes after somebody with a title. It may be a little dangerous going after, no doubt, like you said yourself, he's a tough guy, a slick guy, a very durable guy, and makes you wonder why he hasn't been pushed along here. That's the guy you go to. And you guess what? He has the belt. So you can't go around them. You have to make up what's going to be in front of you if you want to get the bigger fights. So he's in a great position, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's definitely what it does is, depending on how you get the belt, it kind of legitimizes you. And it also, you know, immediately the paycheck goes up because now you can go to TV and say, I've got a belt holder. I've got, not only that, I've got, you know, a WBA belt holder. And let's put on, you know, a 12-round fight. Let's put on a championship fight. So immediately, you know, the networks are going to get more interested. And because that network money is involved, the paycheck goes up. The asking price goes up. You know, it's like a you know, an actor getting a good movie or a good part or, you know, a writer getting published. Next time out, he can ask for a little more money. So for a guy like him, who's a very good fighter and a dangerous fighter, getting that belt when you're not exactly a draw, you know, he's had to be a bit of a road warrior, and you're a dangerous guy to the top people, and it's kind of a young division in some ways. You got guys like, you know, Alvarez about to be a title holder, and also old, and a guy like Cotto who's looking to kind of, you know, fight the Mayorgas of the world and wait around for maybe a Pacquiao rematch or the rumored, you know, rematch with Margarito and kind of cash out with big names that he can beat. It's really important for a guy like Trout to have that belt to bring the negotiations and say, this is what I bring to the table. I bring unification, you know, the possibility of that. I bring a belt. And immediately the money is going to go up and the notoriety is going to go up. And what he brings to the table becomes much more important. So people can say what they want about the belts and they're corrupt and they're crappy. And, you know, I was, you know, just as appalled as all the other writers and fans that read the WBC rankings this week and
right.
Just kind of said, you know, like, how did this guy get here? You know, I was just as upset as everybody else. But at the same time, those belts to the fighter themselves and to some of the lower-level promoters, those belts mean a lot. Like Kathy Dubas said last week, you know, without Zab Judah getting a belt, if he can get it against, you know, Mabuza, then why would they fight him? He's just dangerous. He's got a name. He's a bit of a draw. But he's also been through the mill on HBO and Showtime. So Showtime and HBO might not be that interested in him. But if he's got a belt, he brings something to the dance that makes him enticing. So they are important on some level.
I agree. I completely agree. They are very important. They, you know, do bring some type of leverage. It goes with everything. You know, there is a lot of pros and there's a lot of cons when you talk about situations in boxing. But hey, it's boxing. It's the it's the only sport where it's the only sport, really, honestly, where there's not a team or a franchise backing it up. It's a sole, you know, driven type of sport. It's the fighter who has to drive themselves to get to that next level, and he's got to deal with individuals. Now, you may not like some of the things that are turned over, you know, when the rock is lifted, but guess what? It's one of those things, you know, and what can you say? You know, Ponce de Leon Adrian Broner are going to be fighting. The problem, we have, you know, the problem on leaving the ring. They're set for March 5th. I like this fight. You know, Ponce de Leon originally was supposed to be facing Jason Litzel, right, Gabe? And
right.
I don't know what happened there. I guess the negotiations didn't complete themselves. They didn't go through. But Adrian Broner is a very respectable prospect, and he's an undefeated prospect, and they're supposed to be battling out for 10 rounds at a junior lightweight showdown, like I said, co-feature in Anaheim, California. What do we like about it? What do I like about it? You know, the thing that I like about this here fight, too, is that Ponce de Leon is still building himself, okay? Now, the problem, Broner, he is a prospect, but he's one of those guys that's just going to give you problems, you know. Is he enough? Does he have enough experience to keep Ponce de Leon, who's been trying out new things? I say he does. I think he does bring experience here, Gabriel, that he's going to give Ponce de Leon some problems and may be able to pull the edge and take this from Ponce de Leon. I think Ponce de Leon may run out of luck with Adrian.
Yeah, you know, I love this fight. I think it's a really exciting fight just because – you know, Broner is kind of a young guy that's coming up, and he's about to, you know, try and prove himself. Whereas Ponce de Leon's kind of making a final run at things, and he's looked really good, you know, under his new trainers. They've really straightened up his punches, and, you know, it's a classic matchup of pure boxer versus kind of puncher boxer. I tend to lean towards Broner. I like the size and the youth and experience, or youth and just attributes, you know, the power that he brings to the table. But at the same time, you know, you kind of look at him, I look at him kind of like, almost like a Roy Jones type or not like a Nassim Ahmed, but he's an unorthodox fighter is what I mean. He kind of fights in his own style.
Yeah,
and
right.
When you get a guy like that, you have to be very technical with him to break him down. Look at Barrera versus Ahmed. You got a guy that's unusual, so you stick inside the pocket, you box him, you use your jab, you don't overextend yourself or get overly aggressive to walk into one of his shots. And if Ponce de Leon can do that, that power that is very legitimate and the chin of Broner that hasn't exactly been completely tested yet could come into question. It's a hell of a matchup. It's very exciting. I'm going to call in Alex Ariza here in just a second, Dave.
Okay, I'm going to keep talking a little bit about this fight here, and just let me know when we have Alex Ariza on. But, you know, the Ponce de Leon, his style is one of – you know, you can pretty much say, fight fans, that we've kind of watched this guy develop. You know, he had a very amateur style. He has been improving. When he got in with Cornelius, he showed us something there. Escalante, he showed us something there. Broner is a guy that is definitely has not been tested chin-wise. He hasn't been chin-checked and stuff, but he's the youth. He has a little bit more size. And if you box Ponce de Leon, if you box him and not decide to sit and trade with him, and you box him intelligently, I still say Ponce de Leon is going to have a lot of problems, you know? So I'm going to lead with the problem.
And we're back.
How you doing, Alex?
We have Alex Ariza here with us.
How you doing, Alex? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Hey, it's great to have you back on Leaving the Ring, you know. It's always a pleasure, brother, when you come on and speak to us here on the radio.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, Alex, you know, there's so many rumors kicking off about you at this moment, you know, and I've met you plenty of times, and you're a great guy, man, and I will sometimes go, when I hear these rumors, I'm like, man, why is this happening to Alex? You know, now there's rumors, they're saying that you're out of the Manny Pacquiao camp, you know, that there's been some distress between you and Freddie Roach. Is there any of it true, or is this just some stuff that is just kicking off like back in junior high school?
Yeah, no, it's always got to be something that gets stirred up. I don't know, maybe it's good for... I don't know what it's good for, but I think, you know, you always have to kind of look at the source. You know, if you, you know, look at, I mean, these things, for whatever reason, they snowball. And, I mean, it was Floyd Mayweather Sr. who made the first accusation about steroids against Manny, and look where that went. And I mean, really seriously, Floyd Mayweather Sr.? And then now this one was started by Miguel Diaz. I mean, I can only think, you know, when you get into your 90s, you know, sometimes you get confused with what's reality or what might be going on in your head. But my assumption is that maybe he got confused with him getting fired with Mia Donna, and he thought that was me being fired. I really don't, I can't, you know, I'm an educated guy, but I just can't speak rationally about, you know, the things that Miguel Diaz says he does.
Can you clarify for us what exactly happened with Amir Khan and the camp and you guys parting ways?
Yeah, I mean Freddie and I are two separate entities. You know, I'm an independent contractor. I'm hired generally by the fighter. You know, 2 months prior to camp starting, I told Amir that, you know, I'm an independent contractor. If you still want me to be your conditioning coach, this is what it's going to be. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel better with you working for me because then, you know, I know that you'll give me more individual time. And, you know, so we spoke about this when we were in the Philippines. I gave the contract to his uncle, and his uncle then forwarded it to whomever. And, of course, nothing was done. It was, you know, they just procrastinated. You know, oh, don't worry, mate, we're going to get it to you, mate, your ass, and the whole time. And next thing you know, we're at the week of the fight, and I still have no paperwork signed. So I had Amir sign it there. I told him that his people didn't, you know, drop the ball on it. But, you know, leading up to that conversation, there were so many things that weren't prepared for us when we were there, so he kind of understood, and he signed the paper. The paper was then stolen out of my room. I just recently found out, unfortunately, that it was Amir who orchestrated them stealing it. He sent his friend, I guess, Saj, his receptionist and assistant, to go and take the contract out of my room. Why they took the other contract, I'm not sure of, but that's what I've come to find out.
Well, wait. So you're telling me he went and signed something with you and later decided not to confront you about it, but said, you know what, I made a mistake, let's take that contract back, without him even knowing?
Well, the problem is that he was so scared that he was going to get in trouble, you know, by his father, and you know, maybe that's what made him do that. I can only speculate. I can't really even tell you, because, you know, when I told him, I said, you know how your people are about, you know, being disclosing amounts and paying and stuff like that. And he goes, yeah, true that. And then he says, listen, I give you my word, man, if I have to, I'll get my own account, and I'll have money funneled into it and pay you. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. I go, do you hear what you're saying?
Right.
I go, now you wonder why I got to get this signed? And so maybe, you know, just the fear of the repercussions of him signing something, you know, without their consent, you know, maybe freaked him out. I'm not really sure.
No, there's been some other rumors. You know, you've been in the game long enough to know the rumors just fly like left and right, especially where it concerns Manny Pacquiao. I mean, everybody today, I don't know if you were on Twitter or if you even do that, but everybody couldn't stop talking today about Manny Pacquiao's hair, you know. But just saying just how silly things can get. But there's rumors about you guys kind of splitting. Can you speak to your relationship with Manny? Are you going to be involved in this camp, and are you still his conditioning guy?
Of course. You know, Manny and I have been together almost 4 years. You have to really consider where it came from. It came from Miguel Diaz. I know that Miguel's upset that I made him sit on the floor during the Margarito fight, but you got to get over it, you know. And so he clearly hasn't gotten over that. I can't really speak intelligently about, you know, what his motives were, but I can only assume from talking to Manny last night, because Manny was, his assumption was that I got fired from Wild Card. So I think there was a little, you know, and then from what Freddie had told me, he told me that Michael Kahn's had called him, and this was a while back, and said that, you know, Manny felt that a cut man was more important than a conditioning coach. So we kind of knew something was up, but we didn't think of anything about it until, you know, Miguel, you know, started talking about the Pope not being Catholic, or, I don't know, something to that. But I guess, you know, bummer for him, I guess the Pope isn't Catholic, because they went to Manny.
Yeah, I guess so. That's a bummer for the Pope.
No, so, you know, Manny and I sat down. He really, you know, he was really short about it. I told him, I said, no. I said, Miguel Diaz is telling everybody that, you know, I'm not working the corner. And he said, who's Miguel Diaz? And I said, you know, Miguel, the cut man. And he says, who? He goes, oh. He goes, huh? And then he says, well, hey, did you get everything packed, you know, all the training equipment? And I said, yeah. And, you know, he went into that right away. And we at that point, if Manny doesn't know about it, Manny doesn't care about it, there's no sense for me to you know, giving it any more energy than it really deserves. So we just moved on from there. And then he says, you know, we'll meet, you know, at the press conference and so on and so forth. So.
Is this just par for the course with a Manny camp? I mean, you've been there for 4 years. You've seen it, I think, you know, pre-De La Hoya and then post-De La Hoya. Is this just par for the course, and how much has it changed in that four-year period, this kind of Manny mania?
Well, of course, you know, now that he's a congressman, it's completely different. You know, he doesn't have the time that he used to like back in the day when we used to be able to sit there for, you know, hours on time talking or randomly or doing just the normal things or playing darts or pool or any of the other things that we used to go do. Now it's completely different. He's at a completely different level. He's a congressman, and he's obviously, you know, probably the biggest star in sports. So it changes, but behind closed doors, you know, Manny is still Manny, and I think, you know, we've had such a good rapport and that we've developed over the years, and so he's still the same with me. When that kind of stardom and that kind of fame and you know, just people just constantly at you, you know, for your attention and for your time, you know, it's just, you know, it's what happens.
Let's get into this fight a little bit. You know, last time you guys talked about, you know, the big storyline was he was distracted and all that, but really as it came out, you guys kind of decided to go a different way rather than bulking up to try to handle the size of Margarito. You slimmed down and dealt with him with speed. With Mosley, obviously you're not going to give me your whole game plan, but are you adjusting much from your normal plan, like taking the Margarito fight out? Are you going to kind of go back to the way you used to do things, or are you going to tailor-make this approach for Mosley specifically?
That's a good question. I thought that I was going to focus on some other things that we couldn't focus as much on because of the inconsistency. You know, here's the thing with the Margarito camp. You can have a good program, and if you're consistent with it, then it becomes a great program. If you have a phenomenal program and you're not consistent with it, then it becomes a bad program. So everything has to be consistent. And I think, you know, for the fans, I thought the fight was, you know, obviously the fight was great. But clearly, you know, I don't think any, you know, from what I've, you know, what I saw and what other people have talked to me about was, you know, we never saw Manny ever, you know, get tired or you know, not be able to finish an opponent when he wanted to. And I just think that was, had to do with the, you know, the lack of consistency that we had in that camp. But, you know, he said he was going to change and do things, you know, go back to the old ways. So, I mean, it all depends on what happens. But, yeah, I think, you know, for somebody like Mosley, I think we have to focus on a few different things, you know. But I always look at it like this, you know. I never, you know, Freddie always says, you know, never, you know, years ago he told me, don't ever judge a fighter by his last fight because you just never know. So I'm looking at the Mosley that fought, you know, Margarito. I'm looking at the Mosley who had his best fights with De La Hoya. So in my head, I'm going in with that mindset that's the guy that I have to get Manny ready for.
Hey, you know what, Alex? And I think that's the right idea to do because speaking about inconsistency, that's pretty much Mosley's career, you know, where we have counted him out and then he gets himself counted back in, you know, in his career. And my question to you is that because Mosley is not the biggest guy, but he's one of those guys that just naturally – strong, you know. So with Manny, do you have to work on strength conditioning with him? Because Mosley obviously is a guy that's going to push forward, and he's got good hand speed. Where, you know, with Margarito was a big guy, but he was a thumping big guy, really slow and kind of follow you around. What are some of the things you have to look at with Mosley?
Well, you know, even though the Mayweather fight wasn't that great of a fight, you know, he was very, very dangerous early. And you're talking
right
about against a guy who is probably, arguably, the best defensive fighter in boxing. So, you know, and obviously Manny has been criticized for getting hit, you know, being hittable and getting hit a lot. So, you know, the idea is, of course, you know, Manny's not the biggest guy in the world. It is, of course, the same plan as always, get him as big as I can get him, without sacrificing the speed, as strong, as powerful, built his body to absorb any kind of punishment in case, you know, that's going to happen. And then, of course, focus on speed and explosiveness, you know, towards the end.
I remember you had, when the last time we had you on and stuff, and you felt like, you know, his speed didn't seem as quick as before. With this here new training camp, and I knew that the last time you were on, you said, you know, we didn't have the training camp, the intensity that we normally need. because that's what builds the speed. Now, going into any training camp, you obviously have to have a formula, you have to have an agenda, and it's got to be followed. So when you make this all up, do you sit there and go, I know Manny said that he's going to change, but if he doesn't, I have to now rearrange everything. Are you a little bit worried about that?
Absolutely. I think it might be different. I think, you know, Manny was so used to whatever he did, and you know, all those, he's have all those distractions. You know, he started playing darts, and when he got so good at playing darts and winning tournaments, he started playing with the opposite hand. And then when, you know, that he mastered that, he started playing pool. And then when he mastered that, he started acting and then singing. And then, you know, and he was just, you know, he was just killing it. But then when he got into Congress, I think things kind of changed. And he found himself, you know, it being a little bit more of a struggle than he anticipated. So he inundated himself with everything that had to do with politics and things like that. And I think that kind of that took away that balance. Away from the training, and because I think that's just Manny's resiliency to not fail, and so he saw that might have been the situation, and there's no way that Manny's going to let anybody see him fail, or you know, for himself or for anybody else. So I think he put more of his attention and energy towards the politics. Maybe now he has a more of a grasp on it. He'll know how to balance the two, I'm hoping, and we'll have that consistency that we've had in the past.
Is it a grasp of having being able to balance both out, or is it a reality check of what he saw of his performance with Margarito? Was he satisfied with his performance?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, after the fight, we were in his room and we were just kind of talking. And we were there, and I just said simply, I go, Manny, you know, there's no sense in you getting hit like that. You know, you don't want to train, or, you know, you want to do things. And, you know, maybe it is better maybe that you don't have me, because I can't sit there and watch you just, you know, what, hang around for a paycheck and just watch you get hit like that. It just didn't make any sense. I don't think he needed to get hit like that in that fight. I really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I thought if we would have came in the kind of shape that we were in for the Cotto fight and for the Claudio fight, I think that man would have knocked that guy out, you know. But he was so small, you know, and I just, you know, Margarito's is a big dude and a big puncher, and I just thought that he took way too much punishment for that fight. He told me, he said, you know, bro, never. He goes, not never again. I'm gonna train right.
You know, and I was going to say, yeah, he looked really small enough. I mean, the times I went down there, when he was going to fight Oscar, he had the bulk. When he got in with Cotto, he looked bigger than Cotto. Same thing with Kaladi, you know, height-wise, of course, but the size of his body. But when he got in with Margarito, and you had him slim down, I believe it was, what, 144.5 or something?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you're 144.5 at 6 o'clock in that 5 o'clock in the afternoon, what do you think you woke up at? You woke up at 140.
40, yeah.
If you're lucky. So you're talking about a guy who woke up at 140 pounds, you know, against a guy who weighed 165. So, he was just too small. You know, that body wasn't, you know, we didn't build that body like we had in the past to absorb and to weather that kind of a the onslaught that Margarito brought.
And what leads up to my question here, Alex, is that a lot of people refer Manny as a small guy. Seeing him in person, he's not that small. That's what surprised me in how tiny he looked with Margarito. And when I've seen him in camp, he's made a 153. You know, he was training at 153. And he was slimming down. Is that his walking weight, or could he actually make 154 to perform at the level
he's able
to perform at 147?
I'm sorry. No, it's so much work to get him to 151, 153 pounds, and that's a fluctuating weight. I mean, you're talking about having to hit that caloric mark day in and day out, because the second you miss any of those I mean, we skip something. That's what I'm talking about, consistency. I mean, consistency goes through, I mean, starts from dieting to obviously the training and to the food. And, you know, it's was so much work getting him to at that 153. Because of his body, I mean, he's not that big. So, it's a lot of work. It's kind of funny because one time we were just sitting in his room and he was like, you know something, bro? You know, my whole life I've been struggling, you know, to make weight. You know, it wasn't, I couldn't eat or I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that. Now I have to eat all the time and I was miserable. And now I have every, you know, half an hour, every 45 minutes you're putting something for me to snack on or something to eat or something to drink. And then he goes, and I'm still fucking miserable. Who told you to fight at 54, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Going for your 20th belt. How hard is it, in terms of consistency of camps, to do half in Baguio and then half over here? How much of a challenge is that to game plan for? And does the weight fluctuate in the travel in terms of, you know, the region that he's at and the region that he's moving to?
Not really. I think we have more consistency. Well, in the past, we had more consistency in Baguio because of everything being so accessible. You know, we lived in the hotel. The gym was in the hotel. They had a great track. They had all the amenities that I needed, and everything was set up. Everything, we shipped everything over there, and everything was very, very convenient, you know. For me, things were more consistent there because, you know, our rooms are next to each other. I was more in control of the food. I was more in control of when he ate, the timing, just overall. But here it's very difficult because I live here in my house and Manny lives in his house. You have to rely on that he's going to do things and get up in the middle of the night to drink his shakes and, you know, somebody's going to have the food ready. You know, you have to rely on the other team to, you know, to pick up, you know, where I can't be there. So, which I don't like, but, I mean, that's where we're at. Most of my other fighters, they stay here with me, and especially getting closer to the fight, and that way, you know, I'm completely in control of it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I want to be responsible. If something goes wrong, I want it to be my fault. And as everybody knows, at the end of the day, I got to answer to Freddie. So, at this level, with the athletes that we have, you know, the margin of error is zero. Zero. So, you know, I like to go there because of that.
Now, is he eating all the time? Is it because you've revved his metabolism to a point where he's just burning energy all the time?
Well, as you know, he trains like a maniac.
Yeah,
so
like 3 hours,
Yeah, the calories that he burns, man, and the level of you know, hormones that he, you know, not the good ones, you know, stress hormones that he creates in his body. I mean, we have to wait X amount of time before we start feeding him, and then we have to start not only replacing what he lost, but now we have to start building on top of that. So everything is broken down into, you know, to the hour, you know, every 2.5 hours for this one, every 2 hours for this one, snacks in between, you know, increasing, you know, the fat. I mean, it's just a long process to get him, you know, from that 143, 144 pounds to get him all the way up to 153, you know.
The big question already, what's that?
Oh, I was just going to say, you got to remember, on a bigger, taller guy, you know, You talk about 1 or 2 pounds, you really don't see it. But when you're a small guy like Manny, 1 or 2 pounds looks like 4 pounds.
Right.
So when you put on, you know, 6 pounds, it looks like you put on 15, 20 on him.
Yeah.
So that's why the appearance looks so drastic. Because when you just, even though you put on, you know, we put on 6 pounds, 6 pounds looks like, oh, you know, 18, 15 pounds. So...
yeah, it's a huge difference. I mean, just seeing a 144.6 next to Margarito, I was like, dude, you know, he looks so skinny. He didn't look very big at all. But then fight night, he looked, you know, he looked top of his game. You know, the big question everybody always asks, and you might laugh at this, what's in the shake? Everybody wants to know.
I know, Alex, come on, man. I'm over here trying to get my body all in shape and everything, too.
I'm trying to get bigger. I'm going to get the belt.
Well, I tell you what, you know, we just Manny and I were starting our website, and at the end of the month we're going to have a launch, and everybody can go there to the website, find out what vitamins he's taking, what protein shakes. You can leave questions for myself and Carrie Tom, who's also my partner. She's a registered dietitian. And, you know, we're going to address and answer everything, and just we're just going to finally put it out there.
I didn't know you were working with Terry. I'm a big fan of her book.
She's amazing. You know, I always want to give her credit. She is such a huge part of our success, not only with Manny, but Amir and Vonish and Julio especially, you know. She is amazing, and she is so smart. I love having somebody that smart, you know, to just bounce ideas off of and really brainstorm things. She's just really an amazing person.
She understands fighting on a really high level, not just nutrition and everything else, but that's one of my favorite books is The Straight Lead, you know, her talking about, you know, Bruce Lee's JKD system and all that. I mean, that's a hell of a person to have on your team. How long have you been working with her?
Since the beginning.
When
I first found out that I was, we were going to be moving up to 147 pounds, you know, I have my own ideas, but, you know, it would be irresponsible if I didn't seek out somebody who was also a real professional and a specialist in that particular field, since nutrition is 80% of every program. You know, I can come up with the best program, strength and conditioning and all of that, but I really needed somebody who was smarter than I was, which isn't probably hard to see. But I met with Terry. We had a lot of the basic ideas. We have very similar backgrounds in education. She just went a different direction than I did, but we both agreed on a lot of the things, and she just seemed like the person that was going to be the one that was going to be able I was going to be able to depend on. She had her fighting background, her athletic background. I was so fortunate to have met her.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm gonna have to look her up. It's somebody that's been a kind of a hero of mine. I'm a student of JKD, so and my teacher really recommended her book, and it really just opened up a lot of doors for me, just in terms of fighting and knowledge. She's amazing.
She is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I mean, she's brought things to my which is outstanding. I mean, things I didn't even think of, and you know, we just bounced things off each other when we started with the De La Hoya thing, and you know, we've been really, really fortunate.
Really
quick, Alex, when is this? When is the website supposed to launch out? When is the release date for it?
Well, it's going to be at the. I'm leaving for the Philippines a little early because we're going to start it there. It was really designed for the Olympics, for the Olympic athletes to go to, so we could start changing their nutritional program. But we're going to open it up for everyone and have an open forum and all that. So. I will let you know the exact date. You know, I'll definitely let Gabe know, and I'm sure Terry will talk to him, or you guys will. But it should be the 1st of March.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, and you know, Alex, it's always a pleasure to have you on. And you know, as long as we keep getting those rumors, it's always entertaining to get you back on and clear them up.
Well, hopefully, we'll do it when it's not good rumors, not bad ones.
Well,
I don't know if there's such a thing as good rumors. What about me, anyway?
A final prediction. I'm curious. What do you think? What's your guess? That's going to be the big storyline of this. It'll be Fight Camp 360 as opposed to 24/7. What do you expect? Is it going to be the usual chaos? Is it going to be Manny's really focused this time? What do you expect?
Gabriel, it's going to be Manny packing on his cap going into Alex Ariza stealing his contract.
Well, yeah.
Oh, wow, man. I hate to speculate. I already have sleepless nights already. I don't want to think about that as well. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah,
definitely.
Cool, man. I look forward to talking to you again, and good luck with camp.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me, guys. And again, I want to thank everybody out there that emailed me and was supporting me, you know, with everything that was going through, especially the rumors and stuff like that. You know, you never really realize that I've even had people that say, I'm not really crazy about you, but I hope you didn't deserve that and stuff like that. So But thanks to everybody. I really, really do appreciate it. And support like that when stuff is out there is huge.
Hey, you know what? Always been a great guy here, Alex, and stuff, man. And class act as always, brother. Thank you for coming on with us.
No, thank you for having me.
You take care.
We'll talk soon.
All right, you guys take care.
All right, man, you too.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Well, there you go. You know, Alex Ariza, who is the conditioning coach for Manny Pacquiao and was once for Amir Khan and Julio, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. He's helped out numerous fighters, comes on leaving the ring, clears up some of the rumors that have been looming around him, and I like the milkshake question. I was hoping that we were going to, you know, tell us here live and stuff. I had my notebook out and my pen and, you know, small recorder here. I was, you know, and surprisingly, he's going to be launching out a website, you know, in March. So the questions that we all been asking for are what's in the milkshake. And it's the joke. We have that joke around as ourselves here. We're guilty of it. Well, I am. I know, Gabe. And we need to find out. What is in the milkshake? Is it really a recipe, or is it a list of fighters for Manny to fight to make him look great?
That's funny.
You know,
just real quick, the woman that we were talking about, Terry Tom, she's a board member of the Bruce Lee Foundation and a certified Jeet Kune Do instructor. She spent over 1,000 hours in private study with Ted Wong, who's one of the original Bruce Lee students. But she's also a registered dietitian, has a master's degree in nutritional science, and a certificate as a personal trainer from the National Academy of Sports Medicine. She works out of here in Los Angeles, and is really just a groundbreaking person in terms of things that she's brought to nutrition in fight science, as well as a hell of a fighter herself, you know, in martial arts. So I'd heard her name mentioned in conjunction with him. I didn't know she worked that closely with him, but that's a hell of an addition. Just in terms of the nutrition that she brings, that kind of knowledge. But, I mean, she's written a whole book just on one punch within the Jeet Kune Do system. That's really an incredible book, very, very interesting stuff there, kind of tracing the origins of that punch all the way back to Jack Dempsey. So I recommend picking it up, The Straight Lead. It's one of my Bibles. But that'll be something that we should probably get on at some point to talk about her work with the Pacquiao camp, just fighting in general. She's pretty fascinating human being.
You know, and really quick, fight fans, the phone lines are open. We do still have two guests that are going to be calling in. Marcito Ayesta, who's going to be fighting in San Francisco. He should be calling in, and a little later after that, we're going to have Lou DiBella, you know, who hopefully will tell us a little bit what's going on with his fighters out there. 347-215-7598. I'll slow down for you. 347-215-7598. I call in, chop it up some boxing with us on Leaving the Ring. There's some fight fans, though, that want to talk about the three-fight deal that was recently just signed by Bernard Hopkins with HBO. I did want to talk about that, Gable. We talked a little bit about it. We didn't get too detailed into it in our conversation a little bit earlier and stuff. But since we got some fight fans that are calling in that want to kind of bring it up, let's do it. You know, let's see. Matt, what's on your mind, brother? You're on live right now with Leaving the Ring.
What's up, bud?
How you doing, brother?
Not much. Just talking here, listening to y'all.
Thank you, man. So what's on your mind, man? What do you want to talk about?
First of all, I just want to say, I mean, if you are talking to boxers, you are part of the media.
That's right. Thank you very much.
regardless on what scale, I mean, you guys give us a lot of feedback, you know what I mean?
You know, hey, I don't understand why. Look it. What is? Answer me this, Matt. What is the big deal if you're being called media? Is that a bad thing? I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I'm a hardcore fighter, and when I went to look for my newsfeed, I went to Ring Magazine. And when the internet came around, I went to, you know, Max Boxing and all these other sites. You know, from Fight Hype to anything I can get a hold of to see what the media is talking about.
Right.
I don't know. Hey, I could be wrong, but you know. Anyway, so what's up, brother?
not much, man. We just, I mean, it's Bernard. I mean, what you guys think of it?
Well, I'll let you go first, Gabe.
I mean, we're gonna get the, you know, we're gonna get that Pascal rematch, which is a very good thing. It's the fight that all the fans wanted. It's the fight that we should get. The thing is, you know, I'm kind of wondering what the plan is. You know, are they? I know Chad Dawson's going to be on that card, and he's going to be. Hopefully, they're building towards Hopkins versus Dawson. The thing that I'm worried about is it's something that we've talked about. That I actually talked to Kerry Davis, and he right after the Martinez-Logan-2 fight, and what he said was something like somebody's cleaning out a garage. What he said was, we buy fights, not fighters. And there's a very loud sound going on in the background. I don't know what that
go
is.
Go ahead.
What he told me is that they buy fights, not fighters. Now, by giving Bernard Hopkins a 3-fight deal, now sure, they bought the first fight. They bought, you know, Pascal versus Hopkins too. Now, we're not guaranteed that we're going to get Hopkins versus Dawson or Hopkins versus fighter X. What they did was essentially, you know, giving him a 3-fight deal. They bought a fighter as opposed to, a fight. So what I hope is that, you know, because he said he wants to quit by 50, is that we don't just get this next fight. If he wins, which I expect him to, he sits on that win and then waits around for another guy that he sees as vulnerable, fights that fight in a year or so, and then, you know, takes that win and then waits another year, and then we get like that farewell fight at 50. And so the HBO becomes kind of like the farewell tour for Bernard Hopkins, as opposed to seeing him as still a viable fighter and forcing him to fight challenges. That's the problem. And we saw this with, Amir Khan recently, where they bought a fighter instead of a fight. They gave him a fight date. That's what I mean by buying a fighter. They gave him a fight date, but he didn't have an opponent. So they're kind of beholden to whoever they can, whoever he can get to sign for as little money as possible. And what they ended up with was an all-UK fight with Paul McCloskey versus Amir Khan. U.S. fans don't really care about that, and we're not really that excited about it. But HBO promised him the date. They signed up for it. And so the fans end up getting kind of stuck with it. That's my concern. That's what I'm worried about. I mean, Hopkins looked good in his last fight. I want to see that fight again. But what are those other two fights going to be? That's the question.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that I think what some fight fans were a little confused, and they were excited that he got a 3-fight deal with HBO, but it's not within this year. You know what I mean? He could literally drag this out. You know, we could probably get one fight each year from Bernard Hopkins, and they're not. He could not be pressured to really honestly fight somebody of significance or who we would want him to face. You know, so that's what it leaves up to anybody else is whether or not is it good for us as the fight fans? If you're a hardcore Bernard Hopkins, of course it is. You want to see your man get back into the ring. But if you're looking to see some good fights, and it's going to be immediately, we're talking about Bernard Hopkins, and rightfully so, he's up in age and stuff, so we can't expect a whole lot. But we want to know at least what is the plan, and immediately, let's not drag it out one fight each year. You know, let's see what's going to happen within a year or so. So, good for Bernard. Bad for us.
I think we'd just be all satisfied with him, taking Pascal and making history with it. You know what I mean?
I think that's a lot of us were hoping for. Exactly. I think a lot of us are hoping for that and stuff. Whether or not Chad Dawson is going to happen, I think Bernard's eyes on Pascal. I think that's exactly what HBO is looking for. But I don't think we're going to get it this year. I think that what they're looking to do is to get him back into the ring, get him to start talking, because if that's one thing Bernard knows how to do, he can talk about back to a fight, and he can make it very interesting. You know, and I think that's exactly what they're going to give us. But the problem is remember how HBO tried to build up Roy Jones and Bernard Hopkins the first time? They had it so built up that by the time the smoke went down, it cleared. There was nobody there on the stage. You know what I mean? That's my problem with it.
Oh, and apparently, this is as reported by USA Today. Dawson gets a guaranteed fight with Hop, or the winner of Pascal Hop. So at least we get that fight. There's a possible fourth fight on the table, and then Hopkins says that his hit list is Pascal first, Chad Dawson, and Lucien Boutte. Now, Boutte just signed a deal with Showtime, so I don't know what he's thinking with that one. That doesn't even begin till March. So I don't think that fight's going to happen. That's a little more lip service. What we'll probably get is two good fights and then a farewell fight, and maybe, you know, a fourth fight. That's the farewell fight. You know, maybe a goodwill fight, as they call them. You know, you kind of give a guy a showcase type of bout to fill out the deal. We'll
I don't see Bernard going anywhere, to tell you the truth. I mean, this 50-year arrangement, you know, I think he's too stubborn to go away on the terms that he's supposedly throwing out. Remember, let's remember, this is a fighter that said to his mama and promised her, I'm not going to fight past this age. And I think he's making – I think he's just making it interesting for us to think that he's going to retire anytime soon. I think the only time we're going to see him retire if he gets a hellacious beatdown, which I just don't see that happening at this moment.
Yeah, that's really the thing. And I think – you know, it's just the worry for me is just, are we going to get quality out of it? And I think it's kind of funny that here it is, you know, today we had the Manny Pacquiao-Mosley press conference, which was basically a way of introducing the Showtime-CBS deal. You know, HBO just lost their biggest star, you know, because Floyd Mayweather's not fighting right now. He's not going to be going to trial till like April. So here we are with them kind of in the wake of losing their biggest account, essentially. Kind of on the ropes after spending 25% of their budget on Bradley and Alexander and all the fights that go along with that, plus two fights with Sergey Zinjerek. This is their answer to losing all that and all the things that happened. They gave a three-fight deal to a 46-year-old fighter who says, I'm going to fight until I'm 50. I said it on the next round this week, and I'll say it again. It's pretty much time for HBO to fire Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis. They're not doing their job well.
I don't even know if they're doing their job on their desk. I think they're underneath their desk where they can't see anything that is happening out there. Hey, Matt, brother, thank you for calling in, man. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
No problem. And don't forget Danny Garcia, the 25th. Telefuturo, yeah.
All right, brother.
I can't wait. Thank you for calling in, man. I appreciate it.
And, you know, God, you know, out of all the stuff that's been popping off with HBO, you know, and I even said this, look, I'm not going to respect them when they don't even respect their subscribers, and I'm one of their subscribers. And you're absolutely right, Gabriel, you know, and, you know, we have been vocal about HBO and about, you know, everything that they pretty much pushed in the face of us boxing fans, that I think that is the only solution, is to see these guys just kind of disappear. There's plenty of other fighters. And that's the thing, too. I hear from so many so-called boxing fans that are over here putting out, oh, well, boxing dead and because of this and that and this and this, this and this and this and that. Well, you know what? It's not dead. The problem is that you have a huge network like this that is not investing and it's not taking the time to really look at there are talent. There are plenty of talent out there to showcase on HBO. These guys, though, are just taking the easy road with their job, which is to listen to somebody else that's dabbling a little bit into the mix of boxing, and they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, well, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And let's see how that weighs down. It's sad. It's disappointing. It was one of my favorite when Boxing After Dark with Barrera debuted it. It had me hooked, and I got to say, every time I hear Boxing After Dark, I go, man, there's no Showtime fights?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, yeah, it doesn't really mean the same thing anymore. They've kind of lost sight of what their brand is, you know. And I pointed this out when Mosley Mora became an HBO pay-per-view. You know, not just pay-per-view, but HBO used to be the gold standard in boxing. When they put their stamp on a fight, you knew that it was a good product. And that was regardless of records. You know, as Steve had pointed out when he was on, you know, Gotti and Ward were coming in with losses when they fought each other. But, you know, on paper, if you look at it, you know, on BoxRec, you look at the records and go, oh, these guys are horrible. Like, they shouldn't be fighting each other. But if you understand styles and what it actually means to make a good fight, that was a great fight, as we saw with their trilogy. You don't see that anymore. They're not interested in fights. And you know, really, they're looking at, you know, guys that look good on the poster. They're looking at guys that look good, you know, that are photogenic and not exactly built into really good fighters. We saw that with Chad Dawson. When he met adversity, he kind of froze up. He wasn't prepared for the moment. And
you know, he hadn't been exactly put in soft, but he hadn't really been fully developed as a fighter. And then they put him on this huge stage, and he just wasn't ready. You know, and you look at Andre Berto, who's been kind of coddled on that network. Is he, you know, when I was sitting there arguing for him, you know, I wanted to see him versus Pacquiao because I thought it was a good fight. I really couldn't argue that long because there really wasn't much of a body of work that I could say, you know what, he is ready, he's a draw, he's really completed the full gauntlet of who he should fight, not even just in terms of big names, but styles and all that kind of thing, the, you know, guys that are meant to bring certain aspects out of him in order to develop his skills. He'd fought a lot of guys that he kind of blew out, and he blew them out on that network. And so it was really hard to make that case. HBO has really flipped the script on this whole sport. And I don't care what Kerry Davis tells me or Ross Greenberg does in his annual speech. The bottom line is you look at their work in the last 10 years. Since Ludabella left when boxing was still very good there, Seth Abraham was still running the show. And you look at it now, it's night and day. Fights that used to get made aren't being made. The fans are largely ignored in terms of what they ask for. And they're overspending like crazy. I mean, the fights, you know, like Freddie Hernandez versus Andre Berto, you could have taken that side fee and you could have done several, you know, Latin Furies, you know, with that kind of budget or a Top Rank Live. You could have made several of those cards and still done really good fights that would have entertained the fans. You know, that was a really under-radar fight with Soto Antion. It didn't cost a lot,
yep.
But it was a fight of the year candidate, a very clear one, in my opinion, much more so than Con Maidana. And yet we don't get those fights. We have to travel to Anaheim, and we have to stay up late at night on some off-channel to try to catch that fight or buy a $25 pay-per-view in order to get it. As much as people sit there and say Bob Arum is evil and he's bad, you're just looking at the fights like Pacquiao Mosley. You're not looking at all the good fights that he makes, like Soto Antion, the goal fights that are on the undercard that are good matchups. Soto Carras versus Mike Jones. That was a very good fight.
And they're doing it again.
Yeah, and they're going to do it again.
Do it again, you know what I mean? You know, I mean, there are a lot of potential fights here, and the thing is that HBO is focusing on names. They're not focusing on fights, and that's what really honestly hurts us and stuff. But, you know, let me bring in really quick, Gable, because I just definitely want to get back into that topic, but we got to bring in our next guest, Masito No Mercy. Guest, now, what's up, brother? How you doing? You're on live right now.
I'm doing good, man. Doing good.
Hey, so you're coming down to San Francisco next week, right?
Yeah, I'm going there. Right, next week.
You'll be arriving Tuesday or Monday? What is it, Monday or Tuesday?
I think we're going to be there Tuesday, so because we're going to have a public workout, I think. Yeah.
Now, have you been to San Francisco? I mean, have you ever fought there before, or are you excited about coming down to the Bay?
No, this is my first, you know, fight in there, so, and I'm excited to go in there, and you know, I hear there's a lot of Filipino support in there, and there's a lot of big Filipino communities in there, so I'm excited to fight in there and go to San Francisco, and also it's my first time to go in San Francisco. Excited.
Now, you know, Marcita, I was mentioning earlier in the show, the last time there was a good event for Barry, guys like myself who grew up in the Bay, it was when Floyd Mayweather was headlining against the Matador Chavez, and Manny Pacquiao was on the undercard. Now you're over there, and you're headlining with Eloy Perez. The funny thing is that Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao crossed each other to a point where nobody really thought they could fight down the line, but now it's, you know, realistic. But with you coming down over here and bringing a good card on Saturday night on February 18th, Eloy Perez is going to be on that card, and that's actually not a kind of cross by each other fight, but a realistic fight that can happen later down this year. Is that something that you guys are looking at? Is that why you're down in San Francisco headlining with Eloy the Prince Perez?
Right now we're just going there to fight in San Francisco, you know, just happening, you know, the promotion is in there, and it's going to be my first time in there. Well, basically right now we just go for the fight. I don't know what's the next plan next for my promoter, but right now, I'm thinking right now is just focusing this fight, right there.
Absolutely. You know, any nerves? Is there a nerve buildup knowing that there's going to be a very large Filipino population there to see what the talk has been about Pasito?
Well, people in there, I think, you know, I hear, you know, they're like, they're excited to see me there, you know, because I know I have some few, you know, a friend of my friend that lives in there, and then they were like, and excited, you know, to see my fight, and then see me in there in person. So it's just, you know, the excite to go in there, I think is it.
Let me introduce my co-host, Gabriel Montoya from Max Boxing. Gabriel, go ahead, brother, and ask your question to Marcito.
Hey, well, welcome to the show, Marcito. I actually got a chance to watch you at the wild card. I'm curious, you moved your camp to the wild card and decided to come down for this camp. Was this the first time you did that, and why was it that you decided to come down here?
It's not my first time to come down in wild card. Every time, like, I have a scheduled fight, close fight, I always go to wild card because there's a lot of good sparring in there. There's a lot of good boxers in there. There's, like, former champions and, good boxers, kind of like that. So it's better to spar in there because in San Diego, it's not a lot of boxers in here. So that's why I go in there.
I remember we had you on a prospect watch, I think it was sometime last year, and you had talked about you were kind of starting to find yourself more, starting to sit down on your punches more, and as a result, you started to get more knockdowns and more knockouts. Talk to me a little bit about your progress now as a fighter and where you feel that you're at and the things that you need to work on and the things that you have.
I think, you know, I'm progress in boxing is getting higher now because every time, you know, I fight and then the experience and then the technique I get more and then my fighting, I think my fighting experience is getting more and I think getting there and I'm ready for the championship whenever, you know, they give me the championship fight. I just need to work hard and, you know, remain, you know, train hard and, you know, do what I got to do in the ring. And I'm getting there.
Who are some of the... I'm sorry, Gabe. Let me ask this really quick. Who are some of the... Masito, that you have been in there to prepare yourself for this Saturday night event?
Excuse me? What is it?
What are some of the names that you've been sparring with? Who are some of the guys that have helped you out prepare for this fight?
I spar with Ray Beltran,
Jamie Kavanaugh.
Ravi Kavanaugh, that guy.
Jamie.
Yeah, and then Amidu, the African guy. And then it was good spar, and they gave me good rounds. And tomorrow I'm going to spar again, and I hope I can spar with, Evans?
Rashad Holloway.
So it's gonna be my last sparring tomorrow. So it's all set, and all my sparring are, you know, good sparring. So I'm all ready.
That is good sparring there with Rashad Holloway. I know Rashad and stuff. Big, tall, lanky guy. Great jabs. Got a really good jab and stuff. Hey, Vince, how you doing, brother? I thought that was a voice from God for a minute.
I'm sorry, man. I heard you calling and connect, and if you need help with any of the questions, I'll just chime in every now and again. You know,
no problem.
Help him out with his English a little bit.
I kind of scared the hell out of me. I got to be honest with you.
sorry about that, Gabe.
It's all right, man. I'm curious, too. You know, you're in the wild card. You're working out. And you're of Filipino descent, there's inevitably going to be that this is the next Manny Pacquiao. Are you already kind of dealing with that kind of pressure? And how much of that do you just have to put out of your head? And particularly, this is kind of a question to Vince, and just kind of develop your fighter on his own and let him find out who he is by himself.
Well, Mercito, that's never been a problem for him since I've met him. He's never been one to, I mean, he went to San Diego. He could have stayed up here with the rest of Manny's team, and but he wants to make his own name, and he's, like I said before, he's not starstruck, or and he feels that his ability can put him in a position to be Mercito Hesta, and, you know, so we work big on his name. He's just different than Manny. I mean, there's a lot of things that are the same, but, and there's things that Mercito appreciates Manny forever because he has opened the doors, but he's, you know, he's got a different style, and, you know, he'll tell you, Freddie helps us, you know, a lot. We can't thank him enough. You know, Freddie, you know, counsels me, you know, because I'm not a big head person. I take advice from everybody because if anything can benefit Mercito, then I'm all for it. So I've never been shy, you know. Like, I'm helping Carl Peñalosa, who has done the bulk of the work to get Mercito, you know, where he's at. And, you know, I took over for him so he could handle some business back home. And I'm a student of the game. My father is a great, you know, veteran trainer who's worked with fighters for years, and he's always told me to always be open to learn more, and nobody knows anything. So with that, and Mercito being such a thinking fighter and so smart, you know, we kind of go on different ideas. You know, we ask Freddie counsels us on moves, and we just perform them, and we come up with plans together. So it's very much a, you know, Team Hesta very much is a team. You know, I may be the chief in the corner right now, but, you know, to us, you know, the fight is won, you know, before we even get in there, and we're on the same page. So it's great to be at the wild card. You got contenders, former champions, champions from all over the world. And, you know, boxing is a universal sport, and we get exposed to so many styles that you get a guy like Mercito who can pick up those styles and adapt. And he's just, you know, he's like a phenom, man. He just gets better every fight. And that's why we're not shy about saying we'll put him in there with anybody who, you know, fights him. And we get accused of this and that, but no one, for all the people we call out, I mean, no one has ever called Mercito out. So, I mean, if he's a joke and whatnot and overhyped, then, well, I mean, someone step up. You know, I think this fight we tried to get David Rodello, refused. We tried to, you know, Hector Velasquez up until last week. He came with some astronomical number that was unrealistic. And, right. You know, these guys, I mean, if they're not fighting him, I mean, I guess maybe they just don't like us. Maybe they're not scared of him. But, you know, it's, you know, we're going to do what we're supposed to do. They brought in Trezoncles for this fight, and quite simply because he was the only one that would take the fight. So, you know, we're going to put, you know, take care of who they put in front of us. And all we can do is ask for the best. You know, but as far as, like, you know, the training, everything has been great, you know. The sky's the limit for him, and he, so long story short, he's Mercito's very very adept, and he's very much aware that he wants to be Mercito No Mercy Hesta, and if anything, he can just carry on the honor of the Philippines, but not be Manny, just be him.
You've knocked this guy out in 7 rounds last year, in last August. Now, obviously, you know, he's a last-minute replacement because the Velasquez dropped out last week, in the last second. You guys got to fight. You know, you can't just, because he doesn't want to fight, not fight. But what do you get out of this fight? You know, fighting somebody you've already beaten before, is it simply something that is to stay busy? Are you going to work on something else with this guy? What does it do for you guys?
For me, right now, I think, you know, I'm still gonna do the same, kind of the same, you know, what I did last time. But, you know, I just need to more like, more pressure, more, because that time, you know, he ended up in 7. They thought that, you know, oh, this guy is nothing, because, you know, it ended up in 7 rounds, and then some people, and then some boxers, you know, they knock this guy, or, you know, finish this guy in, like, earlier rounds more than 7. And I was like, that time, you know, I know I'm thinking, you know, I'm way, my skill is way better than this guy, because, you know, And then that's why I was like, I'm not really like, you know, like want to finish it that much, you know. I feel like I want to give some more rounds or like that. But as soon as my co-manager trainer here, Vince, says that, no, you need to do it in the seventh round, I was like, finish you more. And, you know, I got him in the seventh round. And then the next fight with Ivan Valle, you know, I wasn't, like, in shape. They said, you know, it's hard for me to beat this guy. They said, oh, this is going to be a hard fight for Mercito because, you know, Tarzankos is have a hard time. I was like, oh, really? So I was like, all right, this fight, I'm going to, like, be serious, you know. I need to, first round and second round, I need to push more, you know, to show them that, you know, I'm not that, you know, like the last one. You know, show them that that's not really I am. So I show it to them. Showing to them the last fight that I have with Ivan Valle, and then I stop him in the second round, and hopefully this one I'm gonna pressure more, try to end, you know, or if I can, you know, end it really quick. I can't say about the fight, you know, but my plan is like end it quicker than, you know, for the seventh round or, you know, like that. So just right now, pressure more. That's our plan in this fight.
Hey, let me jump in there. This fight, and you know, we were frustrated, you know, and this happens, but we are fortunate, you know, because a lot of guys aren't getting fights, and we are fortunate, yeah, you know, that this guy stepped up to get us going again. We're just, this more than anything is for the Filipinos in San Francisco, and that's what our motivating factor is. Gennaro Tarzankos, yeah, of course, he's way past anything that he was or could have been. But at the end of the day, anybody in that ring is dangerous while they're upright. So we're, you know, Mercito and we've kind of just to get, you know, remotivated, because we lost, you know, he got a little disappointed that he wasn't going to be able to fight someone tougher, you know, so... to re-motivate it, we just kind of keyed on the fact that, you know what, we were going to fight in front of this large audience, Filipino and regular American people, of all, you know, of anybody who's a boxing fan in the Bay Area who never got a chance to see Mercito or who, you know, may want to see him in the future. We're kind of looking at this like as us and as Mercito giving his fans, you know, up there a chance to see him and display. You know, we don't think that they're too concerned about who we're fighting. We just think in the long term, people will remember him. And we've been, I'm not to get into it too much, but our promoters promised us a big announcement after this fight. So we'll see. You know, like Mercito said, you put someone tough in with me and it was him, they're going to go quicker. So, I mean, the more willing participant, the more you're going to see out of this kid.
You know, Vince, I got to applaud you, both of you guys, because the honesty that you just threw out here, because that was going to be one of my questions, and Gabe asked it to you, and you guys were just straight up. And I think that shows the listeners and fight fans and people that are going to witness this fight happening on February 18th. Your knives are not blowing any smoke. You guys are telling the truth. Like, hey, listen, this is what we got. This is what we got to deal with. And unfortunately, this is what happens in boxing. And you guys definitely are not sugarcoating anything and trying to force feed it down the fight fans. And I got to say, I really appreciate that, what you guys are saying here.
No problem, man. It's people aren't stupid, and the educated fight fans, they're not stupid. The writing's on the wall, but the fact is, like I said, Gennaro Tarzankos, he took this fight, and there ain't nothing more dangerous, my dad always told me, than a fighter who has nothing to lose. So we're going to treat him like we'll treat anybody else, and he'll get dealt with, you know what I mean? You know, like, I applaud him for being brave enough to get back in there with the kid, I mean, and who came back from a vacation in the Philippines after a two-month strength training program with his father, who's an MMA and a K-1 kickboxer, and came back, you know, 10 pounds lighter and, you know, bigger, stronger, faster. And
right.
I'm not blowing smoke up your guys' ass on this one. If they offered us Humberto Soto tomorrow, Mercito would probably jump out of his chair with excitement. I mean, the guys on the inside know. We're fine being an underground commodity right now to the hardcore fight fans, and we hear all the criticism, but the fact is the people in the know, the inside people, the Freddie Roaches, Robert Garcia up there with Brandon Rios, and ask those guys about Mercito Hesse, and they're not going to tell you he's a joke, you know.
Right.
He's been a pro since he's 16 years old, and he's never been an amateur, so he knows nothing but to be a pro, and he's had great trainers, you know, with his father and Carl Peñalosa, and just the great fighters he's been around. You know, I think if you put this kid in with the guy, whoever they say is the toughest in the world, I mean, you're gonna see fireworks, man. And this kid, Mercito Hesse, is a finisher, and he's gonna give the fans what they want, man. So get him in there with someone who is the toughest, Brandon Rios, you know, whoever it may be. And by the way, I've been told by my promoter that Michael Cassidy's flat out refuses to fight us. So, like I said, after this fight, we're going to give this to the fans. Mercito's happy to fight in front of all the Filipinos and all the people, all the fans up there. And after this fight, you know, they're going to give us a shot, you know, at somebody. So we'll see what happens.
Well, let me ask you this really quick. And, you know, and we've had you on for some time, so I know you guys, it's late. We got to let you guys go here. But let me ask you just one really quick question here. You know, your frustration, I can hear it with you guys and stuff. I was down last week with Eloy Perez, the Prince, and his camp, and their frustration was as equal because they were promised a particular fight and it didn't go through. You know, it was kind of shined away. Eloy Perez beat David Rodella. He's been kind of moving up in the ladder, and he's in the same position as you guys. Now, when I mentioned that you guys are on the same card, this camp really pretty much said that they were looking at you guys, you know.
I've talked to Kathy before, his manager, a long time ago. I threw some shows at the Hard Rock Hotel in San Diego, and I featured Mercito. I was matchmaking those shows at that time, and I contacted Kathy about Eloy, and because I'd read that they, you know, they'd been looking at Mercito, and, you know, he's in a different weight division right now. He's 130 pounds, which is no neighborhood that we will nowhere go near, you know, because Mercito is a full-fledged 135-pounder now. But if they want to come up, you know, and they want to come up to 135, then that's a fight we welcome. And, I mean, it's no problem for us. I mean,
right,
talking
right.
cheap. If they want to fight Mercito Hesse, they can move up to 135 pounds. And that fight, I mean, it's... I'm not into the business of talking trash, but we're extremely comfortable with a fight like that, you know. So if that's something like that has to be made, and if he's in the way, then we'll deal with that. But you know, we'll, him or, you know, like I said, Mercito, whoever they put in front of us.
Right. Absolutely, brother. Hey, thank you guys again, and I can't wait till you guys come down to the Bay. I'd like to take a look at him before his Saturday night, his Friday night performance and stuff. I'd love to go out there and check you guys out, brother.
Well, we'll be out there. And real quick, man, I want to get a shout-out also on the undercard, and who's been here in camp with Mercito. It's his stablemate and former amateur standout, Aaron Garcia, who is making his comeback out after a year. He's 9-1, 2 draws, and he'll also be on the card. So a big treat for Bay Area fans. They're going to see a former two-time National Golden Gloves champion, national champion, and two-time Olympic alternate in Aaron Garcia. So we're happy to come out. We're really excited to come north.
Hey, we're excited to have you guys down over here. And you guys have a good one, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care,
all
guys.
Take care.
I can't. You know what? I really can't wait to see them when they come down here to San Francisco. You know, I mean, I'm from San Jose, California. So it's when the fights come down to the Bay, you better believe we're going to be there to support it and watch it and stuff. And Mercito, you know, I have not been able to see him live and firsthand, so I'm really pumped up to see him here, Gabe. You know, and even Eloy Perez on that card, who I've been a fan of Eloy, you know, from back before he signed with Golden Boy, you know. So I'm really pumped up to see both these guys headlining at the San Francisco event by Don Targan. And the honesty that he was throwing out there, both of them, you got to appreciate that, and you got to say, you know what, he made me. If you weren't a fan of Manacito right now, you have to now become a fan of him, and we'll definitely want to tune in to watch him Friday night. So, there you go.
Well, I've been trying to get Lou. I'm not getting through. I'll just keep trying. I'll be right back.
Absolutely, and stuff. And really quick, if any fight fans want to call in and chop it up really quick about what's happening in the fight world, or you just want to, you know, continue on what we were talking about a little bit earlier before Marcito came on about HBO, you are more than welcome to at 347-215-7598 on Leaving the Ring. Speak to me, Dave Duenas, or our other host, Gabriel Montoya. You're more than welcome to and stuff. Going pretty faster on the show because, you know, it's got a lot of things here. You know, pretty much chop it up. You know, going back with that fight card that's happening in San Francisco, and Don Chargan bringing it back where he originally, now, I don't know if he originally, but he did root himself here at the Bay Area at one time. I mean, he was a legend here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So now he's coming back over here and kind of spark it up for the Bay Area people. You definitely got to applaud him for that, and hopefully it works all out so we do continue getting the fights. Gabe, back on the line, brother.
I'm here, and I'm here with promoter Lou DiBella, who just had an announcement of his next fight. Not his next fight, but the fight he's promoting, Sergio Martinez versus Sergey Zinjuric. Welcome to the show, Lou. Thanks for coming on.
No, my pleasure, guys. And it's nice to hear you pronounce Zinjuric right, as opposed to his two promoters who couldn't pronounce it at the press conference.
Wow.
No offense to my boys, Gary and Artie, but it tells you what a known commodity this friggin' guy is that his own promoters can't pronounce his name. Unfortunately, he's, like, hard as hell to fight, and he's going to be a handful for Sergio just because of his jab and his defense and his movement. And, he's a very difficult fighter to fight. But no one can spell his name or pronounce it.
Yeah, I wonder what's harder, yeah, spelling his name or fighting him. I'm not sure. He's.
I think they're both very difficult. Hopefully it'll be less difficult for Sergio to fight him than it would be for me to spell his name. So at this point, I have spelled his name correctly, and I know how to spell it. I actually challenged Gary and Artie to come on the phone and spell his name and pronounce it.
Now, Lou, I just want to remind you while you're on the show, it's an internet show. We're not regulated by the FAA, and the over-under on F-bombs is 6, and I've got money on the over. So just throwing that out there for you.
I haven't said fuck yet. Excuse me, there's one.
Let's get into this fight. Before the Williams fight, and I know you don't like to get into kind of history stuff, but there was a lot of things thrown at Martinez. He was, you know, forced to do the catch weight, and we know all the details of the contract and all that stuff.
You know what, look, to cut to the chase, I'll help you here. We're fighting the guy because HBO demanded it. That's why we're fighting the guy. And my fighter, unlike everybody else in the marketplace pretty much, my fighter doesn't get to pick and choose who he fights and doesn't care because he's supremely confident. You know, this is not a match I would have made because of risk for reward, but also because stylistically, it's almost impossible to look good against Zinjuric. He's never been in a great fight in his career. Now, that's not to say he's not skilled. He's supremely skilled. He's a tremendous boxer. He's got tremendous defense. He's got a very active and accurate jab, and he moves well. He's a very, very good boxer. But, you know, if you want a chess match, you can go look at, you know, go read about Bobby Fischer. I wouldn't have done it, but, you know, I understand why they did it. HBO wanted the fight because this was the toughest guy in the world for Sergio to beat. You know, I mean, he's a very stylistically difficult fighter to. And honestly, there's nobody. The part of the problem is it's almost a no-win situation for Sergio in every way. You know, Sergio gave up his title. If he were to lose to this guy, his status goes way down. If he tries to make the fight entertaining, he makes the fight more difficult. And Zinjuric has nothing to risk because if Zinjuric loses, he's still the 154-pound champion. So, you know, we're doing the fight because HBO's paying a lot of money for it and because this is the fight they wanted and because Sergio Martinez doesn't say no to anybody, which is, you know, which is, speaks a lot about him, but in today's boxing environment, could be your own worst enemy. I mean, his attitude is, you know, you put him in front of me and I'll fight him.
Now, Lou, why not take him over to Showtime? I mean, is it just a matter of that giant paycheck and you said, well, we can win this fight because Zinjuric's not a good puncher.
Okay. Ultimately, we left it up to the fighter. And there's also, you know, Martinez is a loyal guy. You know, he's been with Atocha his whole career. He's been with Sarmiento his whole career. you know, Samson, he's you know, been with Samson, and since the second I've had him, you know, he's been a pleasure, and basically we have a deal that, you know, probably takes him to the end of his career. So, I mean, he's a loyal guy, and he feels a loyalty to HBO that gave him the opportunity. And you know, if not for HBO, no one would know who he is right now. So, you know, he feels a loyalty there, but stylistically, I don't think he loves the fight. It's not, here's my fear. My guy's an entertainer, which is a good thing, I think, but to look entertaining against Sergey Zindzurik means you're putting yourself at intense risk. Because in order to, when you open up against this guy is when this guy's at his dangerous. You know, I mean, he doesn't open up very much. You have to open up to make the fight. And it's a very difficult fight, and I wish, you see, here's the other thing. He's never had a major appearance in a meaningful fight in the U.S., and I wish he would have had one first. But from a degree of difficulty, and this is what I want to emphasize, because I think a lot of the fight game is about, you know, risk and you know, not watching a match that's preordained. You know, I may not like it stylistically, but in terms of degree of difficulty, it's the most difficult fight that HBO could have made for Sergio Martinez, and I think that's why they made it.
Does it frustrate you a little bit?
I think you can make an argument that Zurich is the best 54-pounder, you know, in the world right now.
I agree.
Lou, does it frustrate you a little bit that you're a guy that built up the HBO boxing, and now you're on the other side looking in and seeing how things are being handled when you just said right now, it's not a fight that you would have made, and you're a boxing fan. You know what fights are to be made.
In the words of Don Henley, don't look back. You can never look back, you know. So I'm not going to look back. You know, it's frustrating.
If anyone deserves
the right to keep their title or to pick an opponent that was more stylistically appropriate, if anyone was entitled to that, I think it was Sergio Martinez. But, you know, I didn't force Sergio to accept the fight, and neither did Samson, neither did anyone in his camp. Sergio said, if that's who they want me to fight, I'll fight him. If he would have said no, I would have gone to them and said no. It's a little frustrating because, you know, like you name a guy in the sport right now that's gone from through a row of Cintron, Williams, Pavlik, and then Williams again in his four last fights. And then he had to give up a title. I mean, I understand HBO wanting to make a point about fighters that should fight the best, but I think they made the point with the wrong guy. You know, I think they made the point with the wrong guy.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of some fight fans saying, oh, you know, he's not being built up correctly, he's not doing this, I go, well, look at the guys that he's fought, you know,
first
and is
all,
that his fault?
Anyone who says he's not building up correctly, I say, fuck yourself. Because
exactly.
No one knew who Sergio Martinez was until Samson gave me a DVD. I looked at it and I said, fuck, why has nobody signed this guy? There's your third F word, by the way.
Thank you.
No problem, I'm counting. You know, what do you mean he hasn't been built up? Aaron had no desire to put Cotto in with him. He never made a good faith offer. That's all horseshit. When was the last time Aaron put any of his big fighters in against someone that was with somebody else? You know, I just made a deal with Bob to co-promote Kermit together because Kermit desperately wants to fight the guys Bob has, and the only way I'd ever get to fight for Kermit was to do the deal. And he's an older fighter, and I like him. He doesn't have a lot of miles. He does have a lot of miles on him, even though he's still not that, you know, old. I think he wants to get out of the game healthy, and he couldn't get a Cotto fight if I didn't do a deal with Bob. So, you know, I did a deal with Bob. I'm not making a habit of that, but I did it in this circumstance. You know, Martinez, none of Aaron's guys were available, and if you don't think that let me tell you something. Zindzurik is an infinitely more difficult fight than Cotto, an infinitely more difficult fight than Margarito, and an infinitely more difficult fight than Manny Pacquiao. And I know what I just said about Manny Pacquiao is going to freak out a lot of your listeners, but if they don't agree with me, they just don't understand the game very well because he's a little guy. And when he's
right.
Moved up to big guys, they've been very carefully picked. The 54-pounders and even the 47-pounders have been very carefully picked. Sergio is a legitimate middleweight. He's a big, strong guy with speed. He's Manny's worst enemy. Manny shouldn't fight him. I'm not downing Manny right now. He just couldn't beat Sergio Martinez. Sergio's too big and too good. Too offensive-oriented with too much movement. You know, he's too big a guy for Manny. And frankly, Bob Arum said the same thing, and I think it's completely fair. I don't fault Manny. He shouldn't be reaching out for that fight. Sergio's too big for him.
Now, absolutely.
The guy, you know, there's people that criticize and say you haven't done enough, and I disagree. You've got him in the middleweight title.
What am I supposed to do? It really annoys me. I don't mind criticism. I interact more with the fans than any promoter in this business. But
absolutely.
I don't like stupidity. You know?
That's what I'm saying.
People who think I didn't do a good job with Paul Malignaggi.
Right. And you got him at what? He was 33, 34 when you signed
him. No, when I got him, he was 32, just about to turn 33. And,
well,
and
shit,
he had zero name recognition.
Right.
Zero.
Well, shit. What could you have done differently? I mean, this
nothing better than I did it. Nothing. Zero nothing.
Shit,
I wouldn't have taken this fight, and I would have let him look like King Kong against somebody else, but I didn't have the choice. I let my fighters control their own destiny. He knew very clearly that this is not the fight I would have picked for him, but he is the boss. He is the boss, not me.
That's also,
it's very difficult to tell a guy in his mid-30s to turn down, you know, a seven-figure-plus payday, and do something that maybe makes more sense for less money. So, you know, what could I have done differently? You know? The fight would be, the only thing I could have done differently, first of all, no one knows in Zurich whether I'm in New York or I'm in Connecticut or I'm in New Jersey or I'm in California. You know? Additionally, if I could have gotten the right venue in California, I would have taken it. It wasn't available. And lastly, we were half sold out at Foxwoods, and the press conference was yesterday. So, I mean, I'd rather have 4,000 people screaming in a room, with all due respect, than sit in a big room with 3,000 people in a 10,000-seater, like has happened on almost every supposedly big fight that's been on regular cable or premium cable in the last, you know, X number of years.
Now, I'm curious, why do you think he draws better back east than he would, say, in London?
Back east. I don't think, I think he would draw very well right now at the Home Depot Center. Just not, or at the Nokia Theater, or at the Staples Center, against the right guy. I think he's very popular with the Mexican fans because he brings excitement, and that's what Mexican and Mexican-American fans like. I think he lives in Oxnard and has a big following there. I think he'd do very well in California. But the truth of the matter is, I can't promote a Sergey Zurich fight effectively in an area, you know, in a big arena. I don't think that Zurich brings that kind of name recognition. You know, what my job is, even between now and the fight, is to convince everybody who's in the vicinity that could go to the Foxwoods Arena, and also to convince HBO subscribers and fans is that this is an extremely difficult fight, and it's one of the three best fighters in the world fighting one of the most competitive fights that he could fight. It figures on paper it's a lot more competitive than Cotto Margarito or Pacquiao Mosley or Morales and Madonna and Khan and McCluskey, and go through the list. It's probably the most competitive fight that's available by a major fighter in the first half of this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Basically, to all those who are criticizing me for my promotion of Sergio Martinez, you can kiss my ass.
You know what?
I'm going to win my bet because I've stopped dropping F-bombs. I've dropped my last one. I'm keeping it.
I think it's moronic to hear people say that, because the fact is, I think a lot of people are forgetting is that he won a world title. You know, he beat Kelly Pavlik. I think he's his resume speaks for itself.
He was forced into his last couple of fights. He did every. What could he have done differently? I didn't control the venue on the Paul Williams fight. So, basically, he fought a fight in Atlantic City that he had no choice but to fight in Atlantic City.
Right.
So, you know, I was given no choice by the television network other than to fight Sergey's in Zurich. So I couldn't go to the theater at Madison Square Garden and sell it out against an Irish kid like Andy Lee. Zurich is a much more accomplished fighter on paper than Andy Lee, but no one knows him. And that's just the reality. He's not known even within the Russian community in the United States or the Ukrainian community in the United States. There was really – I don't see what I could have done. I mean, honestly, differently. Cintron was on against Sergio, Bunima against Sergio, which was first two fights on HBO were on undercards, you know. When he fought Williams the first time and got robbed, and he did get robbed, not horribly robbed, it was a close fight, but I thought he won that fight. When he fought him the first time, Paul Williams was the A-side. We came in as a replacement, as people forget, because Kelly Pavlik pulled out. So I don't really understand what the bitch is, but, you know, it is what it is. He's in school right now. He's learning English. He spoke his first few sentences to the press and to the public of English at the press conference yesterday, and he has a tutor and he's learning. You know,
you haven't taught him, Lou, how to say fuck you yet?
No, he's not the kind of guy that would say it. He actually is very, you know, he considers himself someone that people should be, who should be at this point as a champion, should be a role model. And honestly, I've never heard him curse.
I've never
seen him drink. I mean, the only thing I've seen is women, but that doesn't make him a bad guy.
Right. Absolutely, you know. I just can't figure out the HBO prejudice against him. You know, I had a chance to go out there and watch him spar in Oxnard and meet him. And we've interviewed him numerous times here on Leaving in the Ring and stuff. And the product is obviously there.
Everyone is entitled to their own opinion. If Sergio Martinez, if I was a television executive and you're never going to see Pacquiao's left for another network and Mayweather's not fighting right now, I would have embraced this guy as my superstar and marketed the hell out of him.
Right.
I don't think I would have elected to choose the winner of Bradley and Alexander and the loser of Bradley and Alexander as the horse I wanted to ride in the race. But that being said, people are entitled to their own, you know, opinions, even if they don't work out. And also, they have been consistent in televising Sergio, and he has been consistent in accepting the fights that they've offered. And I have to promote within those boundaries. You know, the guys that write the check have a lot of say. And the guy that gets in the ring has to have ultimate say over me, you know?
Do you think in a sense that people are
I don't think the American public, I don't think there's a boxing fan in America that really knows the difference between Zbik and Zinzerich, and he's getting stripped because that's how strongly the network thought about Zinzerich, and he's also overpaying Zinzerich grossly because Zinzerich was the only alternative we were given, you know? But it is what it is. Zinzerich's a very tough fighter to beat. And right now, Sergio's got to, you know, what he has to concentrate on is just beating this guy and coming up. Sarmiento has to come up with a strategy to fight a very, very defensive-oriented and skilled boxer with a terrific jab. I mean, he's exactly the style of fighter that makes anybody not look not so good and is very, very difficult to fight. And, you know, he's difficult to fight not because he's unskilled, because he's extremely skilled. You know, I just wish he opened up more and brawled more, but that's not his style.
Do you think people, in a sense, when they look at it and they make that criticism, they're kind of looking at everything on the same scale? It's not like you're...
What criticism are they making? I mean, first of all, if Bob Arum wants to create the UFC and only match his guys with his guys, there is nothing the rest of us can do about it.
Exactly.
Right.
You know?
It's not like you're working with his budget. You know,
I want to hear him more times about Cotto and, you know... And first of all, Sergio Martinez and Cotto, I'm supposed to hand Sergio Martinez over to Bob Arum, let Bob Arum be Sergio Martinez's promoter to get a Cotto fight? Come on. And by the way, you think that Margarito, he wouldn't slaughter Margarito right now?
Yeah, he would see that.
You think Manny Pacquiao's ever going to grow enough to want to fight Sergio? That's not happening. You know, the fight, the problem is, I mean, you know, people, and the other thing is, you know what, there are weight classes for a reason. This catch weight nonsense, you know.
It's ridiculous.
It's a little absurd because a guy that's a middleweight and a guy that's a welterweight are not in the same weight class. You know, Manny's already jumped from frigging flyweight to 54 pounds. He's not a middleweight. You know, I wish he was. I wish he could fight at 54. Sergio would starve himself. You know?
Yeah.
But he's not going to do that. That fight's never going to happen. Cotto's not going to. Sergio Martinez beats Cotto and Margarito now and probably could do it on the same night, as great as Cotto is. But the truth of the matter is, why is Bob Arum going to serve up one of his fighters if he doesn't promote him? It's not in his. It's right now, that's not in the playbook of Top Rank. And right now, Top Rank, you know, they're doing their own thing, and I can't sit there and worry about making matches with their fighters that I can't make.
Now, to jump over to one of your other fighters, Andre Berto, how close is that deal with Victor Ortiz to happening?
There's still some, you know, fairly big issues. I don't want to negotiate over the internet radio, but there's still some issues. And again, I'll just say this because I don't want to get into specifics, but, you know, challengers and guys that are getting an opportunity, you know, particularly if the guy has a loss and a draw in his last four fights, or is it three fights, I don't remember, but, you know, they shouldn't be the ones setting the demands.
When
a champion's given a choice of only fighting one guy, and again, it's slim pickings at 47, and none of Arum's guys are accessible at this moment to Berto. You know?
personally, I think it's a great fight. Because I think Ortiz is
a great
guy.
I love that fight. First of all, people got to remember something. Ortiz is bigger than Berto.
Yeah.
He's literally bigger than Berto. He's bigger than Berto height-wise. He's bigger than Berto in terms of what he's weighed in the ring. His last God knows how many fights. You know? I mean,
yeah.
he blows up from 40 into nearly a middleweight.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's watching him in the gym.
And the other one, style-wise, they don't know, neither guy really knows how to take a step backward. And they both leave themselves somewhat open, and they both can punch. That's a recipe for a very good fight. In fact, like, I like that fight stylistically on paper more than almost any fight we've talked about.
Yeah,
in fact,
I do too.
More than any fight we've talked about.
Because they're both.
Neither guy's gonna—they're gonna go after each other, and they're gonna try to hurt the other, and someone's gonna get knocked out in all likelihood. And if it goes a distance, it's gonna be a very rough fight.
It's a case of kind of two guys with some, you know, flaws, for lack of a better word, that equal up to a very strong fight. You know,
no, it's not just flaws, because Devin Alexander and Chad Dawson, and I can go through a list, and I'm not picking on those guys because they're very skilled, but, you know, Bernard Hopkins on a bad night, there are certain guys that are capable of not looking good, though they're supremely, you know, skilled and don't have a lot of flaws, you know, but
yeah.
A lot of it's just, do you come forward, do you go backward? Are you aggressive or are you a counterpuncher? Two aggressive guys is the best recipe for a good fight, at least one that's pleasing to the fans,
right.
You know? I always keep saying this, I'm going to repeat it again. I'm a boxing freak myself, but the stuff that the guys that enter Dan Rayfield's chats and follow your internet radio show are clamoring for because of quality often doesn't make the best entertainment. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Gotti, Ward, Manfredi, Angel Manfredi, Ivan Robinson, Wilson Rodriguez, go through the list of all those guys that made such great fights back then. None of those guys were pound-for-pound guys.
Yeah, exactly right.
Every single one of them had flaws. Some of the greatest fighters in history, from Sugar Ray Robinson to go down a notch or two, and you go down to Jake LaMotta and Graziano, another level, and guys like Tony DeMarco and, you know, these guys, Basilio, these guys were all flawed guys, but they had balls the size of basketballs, and they fought. Fighters are supposed to fight, not dance. I don't give
right.
a shit what you're rated. If you can't do ratings, sell tickets, and make people want, care about you, then F you. I didn't use the word. You know, I mean, honestly, you don't deserve to be a millionaire just because you have some boxing talent. It's whether or not people want to see you. Do people want to pay for you? Do they want to watch you on pay-per-view? Do they want to come to your fights? That's what it's about. The entertainment business.
To jump the subject real quick, and it kind of actually speaks to what you're talking about, you were an HBO executive. When boxing was mainly covered by newspapers, magazines, now it's very much suffering from, you know, too many websites, guys jumping
in there. What it's suffering from is the mainstream media doesn't give a damn because the general public doesn't give a damn, and editors aren't giving any inches in newspapers to their writers because boxing demo keeps getting older, we're not attracting new fans, and we're becoming marginalized. You know, it annoys me when I read these websites and they talk about how wonderful everything's going because there's some fight between the number seven guy and the number three guy when the truth is no one in the world other than the people who feel that way know who any of these guys are. I mean, right now, the majority of sports fans in the United States couldn't tell you who the heavyweight champion of the world is.
Yeah.
And how many people watch ESPN 3?
No one.
No? We have a heavyweight division that totally lacks one legitimate American contender. Okay? We're reaching for some strange reason and not televising our young stars, but chasing guys from around the world and sticking them on U.S. TV when no television elsewhere in the world is building up our fighters.
So, well, in your opinion, what's the role of media then in boxing?
The role of media, I mean, honestly, the way editors determine what they're doing, I mean, right now, if there was no internet coverage of boxing, there'd be no coverage of boxing. So I support internet coverage of boxing. I can't stand the fact that there's no barrier to entry and every imbecile that watches a fight can create his own blog or website. But put that aside, if there wasn't internet coverage of boxing and fans didn't get into chat rooms and didn't discuss the sport and there wasn't debate on little venues like your guys, Medium, and others, there'd be no publicity for boxing. Yahoo's relegated boxing to the other category in sports.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of websites, if you go to general interest websites, that have done the same thing. There's more print media coverage of MMA in the United States right now than there is boxing. You know, that's a precipitous fall for a sport that you can argue 60 years ago was one of the two biggest sports in America.
Yeah, and it's completely disappeared at this point.
I mean, well, I mean, that's why, I'm not saying this to shit on my own sport. I'm saying this to say, wake up. It's one of the reasons why, look, what Aram's doing, at least it's shaking up the business. And right now, anything that shakes up the business is a good thing because people have to wake up and say, hey, if you love the sport and you really want to enjoy being a fan for years to come, you know, you better hope that some things change right now.
So for you, then, as not a top-ranked guy, but you know, you're kind of, I hate to make this distinction, but it's kind of the next tier in terms of you can't go and make an independent pay-per-view like Bob Arum can. You don't have the stable or maybe even the cap.
No, I can make an independent pay-per-view, but it wouldn't be a hugely performing one. I mean, everyone can make an independent pay-per-view, but right now, to be honest with you, because of the activity of Pacquiao and having an international rights business that no other promoter has, because frankly, Aram's been the only promoter in the last decade that's been insistent on keeping his foreign rights and was able to build a business that's not totally dependent on U.S. TV money. You know, there's only, you know, Top Rank's business model right now in terms of economic success is far above everybody else's, and that's put them in a position of attempting to close shop. Now, that doesn't mean everybody else has to close shop. It just means that myself and Golden Boy and Shaw and, obviously the other guys that are somewhat active with the premium cable networks and recruiting fighters below them, and there's probably a handful in the next, tier, it means that we all got to band together and work together and make matches among ourselves, because otherwise, all together we have a lot of power and oomph and ability to make some good programming, and attempting to keep stuff within our own companies, we're going to destroy the sport. So, I think that there's some good things that come out of business moves that otherwise might create a lack of competition. I mean, it's a problem. It's a problem to an extent that, look, Bob's going to make matches within his own company until it doesn't make economic sense. And from the standpoint of just the pure business person who's only thing is the bottom line in dollars and cents, look, Aram's in this to make money. Aram's not the commissioner of boxing, and Aram's not, the Aram and King over the last, 40 years haven't been the looking to the long-term health of the sport. They've been looking to make bread, which is what most business people do, which is what most corporations do. So, as long as Aram economically, it makes sense for him to stay within his own family of fighters and do everything on the inside, that's how he's going to do it.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, thank you, Lou, for coming through and sharing.
Just, Gabe,
oh,
I got
one. Okay.
Yeah, I just got one question for Lou really quick and stuff. Lou, do you sometimes wish you didn't get into the promoting business?
To be honest with you, but there's also a part of me that I've had some of the highest highs of my life in this part of the business. I think at this point it's allowed me to say I pretty much have done everything in boxing other than box. It wasn't my intention when I left HBO to really be a promoter, but that was the deal I was able to cut when I left HBO, and they gave me, dates and the seed money to establish a boxing business, and that's what I did. I've had some highs and I like the game, and it, as much as, if you love boxing, by definition, you have to have a love-hate with it. I mean,
right.
This is not a sport, you have to. If you love the sport, you got to shake your head so often at what happens. I mean, last weekend, Friday night, there were some great fights on TV, and there were some scorecards I couldn't explain.
Exactly.
And the same thing, I get a call, I watch a fight on Fox Sports, which, I promote Dia Davis as part of my group of fighters. It wasn't a sensational fight, but I thought he won almost every round against Francisco Sierra. And, and then I turn around and one judge has it exactly the way I scored it, 8-2, and the other two guys have it a draw. I mean, Dia Davis won that fight clearly. The night before, I thought Coyote could have gotten that decision. That fight could have gone either way. And it wasn't, and then I hear the scorecards and some guy has it 9-1. And, if my little niece, who plays soccer, is 10 years old and doesn't like boxing, 9 out of 10 times could tell me who won a fight by just watching it. This guy won, not scoring every round, and she gets it right more often than a lot of judges. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a huge
problem.
How many times have you average person watches a fight. They may not have scored round by round, but they could tell you who won the fight. I mean, there's too many times right now that we watch a fight and you hear the scorecard and you go, what were they watching? You know?
I was ringside for that Dia Davis fight, and I had it 8-2, and I was being generous with the two. And
I mean, it was, Jerry, look, it wasn't, especially the second half of the fight wasn't scintillating, but Sierra did nothing. I mean, Davis clearly won that fight. Now, here's the problem, okay? I promote Davis, but it's not going to kill my company or hurt my company badly that Dia Davis got a draw and didn't get a win on a Fox Sports fight. But from the standpoint of the kid's career and his own life and his self-confidence and his ability to make money, robbing him of a victory in a fight like that he won so clearly, it has a big impact. You know, it's why it always bothers me when there's a horrible decision. It's usually the guy on the receiving end of the gift that gets the bigger fight next, not the guy that really beat him but didn't get the decision. So it's, you know, it annoys me. It annoys me. I think that it's another example. I mean, there are bad judges, or there are a lot of good judges, but there are judges that are just consistently funky, and there should be some system of review. You know, the other thing is that there should be some mandatory education of referees and judges. And if a referee or a judge mucks up too many times, and notice I said muck, then there should be some review of an apparatus to take that guy and either re-educate him or get him out of the ring.
Yeah, it doesn't, like all other sports have a check and balance system, and it seems to me in boxing it's really about personal relationships. I mean, your guy can totally screw up a fight.
Yeah, it's beyond just personal relationships. In what other sport does the owner of a team have the ability? You know, in baseball, I own a minor league baseball team. I can tell you this for a fact. There's standardized accommodations for umpires, and, you know, there are set standards. Like, you know, no one's sitting there and sending a first-class ticket to an umpire for his wife and kids to come to a fight. No one's putting an umpire in a suite at the Four Seasons instead of a room at the Mandalay Bay. You know, in boxing, you're pretty much allowed to do whatever you want. And you know, again, right now there's no uniform standards of how officials are treated. Now, that means that officials can be sort of incented or have animus a certain way without taking an envelope full of cash. But still, there's institutional bias. There's a bias because, you're somebody's guest that weekend. And the guy, you know, that's the promoter of record of the show who's paying you, and that's the way it's set up. It's very strange. You know, there's no, you know, and it's one of the reasons why we're no longer, you know, one of the mass popularity, you know, sports in this country, because we shot ourselves in the foot a lot of ways. Not reaching out to young people the way we need to reach out to young people. You know, boxing's demographic keeps aging. That's not good. And that's why, by the way, you know, look, I may not like the idea that Aram's only doing business with himself. And, you know, if he wants to play with himself, I can't stop him. But the fact that terrestrial TV and a broadcast network is going to run a pre-fight specials and help publicize boxing as an industry, you know, I hate to say it, but that's good for boxing. You know, that part of it's
right.
Good.
Right.
Is that pretty standard? The promoters pretty much pay the judges, right? It's not the commission that pays them, but it's the promoter.
Right. And, well, yeah, I mean, yes, we write the checks to the officials, but not only that, there's no, like, one promoter can look, if I put a guy in a Motel 6 and tell him that he's, and I make him take three stops on his airfare because it saves $400, and another promoter is putting him up at the Four Seasons and flying him first class and letting him bring his wife with him. You know, I'm not saying the guy's dirty in a traditional sense. I'm just saying, you know, there's reasons for him to feel biased. It's human nature.
Yeah.
I'm going to favor the guy who treats me better, you know, and it's human nature. That's why in other sports there's standardization so that you don't create favoritism, you know? You think that the head linesman in the Super Bowl – you know, Jerry Jones was, you know, not Jerry Jones, but whoever, the Steelers or the ownership of the Green Bay Packers was in a position to lay favors on them. If they did that, they'd be indicted, you know. In boxing, it's standard operating procedure, and it's, you know.
Do you think a national
commission? We create biases. It's not, I'm not blaming the judges for the system. They didn't create the system.
Right.
But the system is flawed. and the lack of review is flawed. And frankly, the fact that there's nobody looking out for the long-term interests of the industry is probably largely responsible for the fact that the industry has been on the decline, a significant decline, for over a decade.
Do you think there's change in sight? Do you think the system can be overhauled?
Yeah, I actually do. And I think that there's a lot of discord right now in boxing, and there's a lot of uncertainty, and you know, from a business standpoint, the business has been shaken up dramatically in the last month or two. But any business that's eternal, and I think boxing is eternal, I think any business that's like boxing, when you hit the bottom, you create opportunity. The cost of entree for new players to come in is less. The opportunity to start rewriting the way you present and market because you're incented to is greater. You know, I mean, I actually think in a weird way, it's like a junkie, man. You got to bottom out before you get better. And I think boxing's come close to bottoming out. In fact, I think boxing's bottomed out. Unless it wants to kill itself and just keep going the same way it's going. And I don't think that's going to happen because, like I said, the cost of entree is very low right now. So new players, new people, new ideas, you know, it's open season because, you know, when any business goes into the shitter, there is opportunity created.
Lou, am I hearing you kind of fall into with Joe Rogan saying that the boxing is dying?
No, that's not what I said.
Because I was going to say, the guy
you didn't listen to me at all, what I just said. I gave an answer to very
different. I'm giving you a hard time, Lou.
No, but that's not what I said at all. I mean, in all seriousness, it's not what I said.
Right.
I think boxing is eternal. There will always be boxing. You know, and look, they did a great job marketing a product with UFC. I admire those guys. I talked to Dana White. I like the guy, actually. We get along, and I respect what they've done. And I still am not a fan of MMA, but I understand it now. I wouldn't have said – there's some things I said in the interview with Rogan, who I still think I would have mixed it up with, even if it was done now. But I think some of the stuff there I've changed my mind on. I understand the sport a little bit better, and, you know, they get away with stuff we never would get away with in boxing. You know,
that's
the lack of an Ali law that applies to MMA where they could pretty much, you know, handle their guys like employees and we can't in boxing. That's a big difference, and it is a – you know, but at the same time, I understand they got some very good athletes there. I understand now the game. I've watched some UFC shows, and they're you know, unless they're grappling big time, I find it somewhat entertaining. You know, I don't think I'll ever be a big fan, but I'm not the critic I was a few years back. I also, you know, I think they've also gotten some of the flaws out of their, you know, what they do in the ring, and they've changed the rules a little bit over the course of years that. You know, I get it more than I used to. I don't think I'll ever love it, but
right.
I understand it. But I admire the way they market, and I admire the way that they've attracted a young demo, and that they, you know, that their fan base is young, where boxing's fan base keeps aging. I think there are lessons we could learn about how to fix boxing by some of the things they've done in marketing and presenting their sport.
Absolutely, I agree.
I think their cards are much more consistent than boxing cards in the sense that. You know, the quality of the first undercard bout and the quality of the main event often aren't that different, and their fans. You know, I did a show last night, a little club show in New York, and we were sold out at BB King's. It's only, you know, like 900, 1,000 people, but the people got there for the first undercard match because every fight had local significance, and frankly, there were scraps. And that's what MMA does, and particularly UFC does, but MMA in general, that's what they do in their biggest shows. Like, the people are in their seats if the first fight's at 7:30, the people are in their seats at 7:30. You know, when you sit there and you're in an empty room for an undercard in a boxing match and the people show up for the main event, that tells you a lot about, what's wrong with the sport. You know, I like listening to good commentary on boxing, but when I'm at a show, I want to see fights. I don't want to have 30-minute breaks between fights.
Right.
You know?
No, I agree.
In a sense, because of that consistency, they've been able to market their sport rather than how boxing does it, which is marketing one fighter, and then you kind of don't care.
Do something that we can do in boxing, we simply don't do. If someone's popular, they use him again and again, even if he loses. If the fans care about a particular guy, Kimbo Slice was, you know, pretty terrible, bro. He was terrible, man. He got his ass kicked on fucking YouTube before he ever was an MMA fighter. But people responded to him. He had some – no, seriously, he had charisma.
Right.
and the fans liked him, and he was used because the fans cared about him. You know, in our sport, you know, some guy, some nerd who's writing for a website, and a bunch of guys, you know, politicized, you know, decision makers at ratings organizations, but also nerdy boxing writers that all want to one-up one another, sit around and determine some guys on some imaginary pound-for-pound list, and even though no one cares about him, there's some idea that he deserves to be in the ring and deserves to make a lot of money, even though nobody's watching on TV and nobody's in the seats. Simply not true. Shouldn't be that way. If people have to care about a guy, they have to want to see him. And you'll see guys get knocked cold in a minute and a half on UFC and then come back and knock someone else cold, you know, 2 months later, and then come back, you know, 2 months later and be on a pay-per-view again because people care about him. And that used to be the case. You got to remember, Arturo Gatti had a stretch where, look, the only things that were really done that were wrong in Gatti's career were matching him with Mayweather and De La Hoya, which were absurd. But, you know, look at the wars he had when he fought Angel Manfredis and Wilson Rodriguez's and Mickey Ward's, and go through the list, you know. People never knew about Arturo Gatti. Arturo Gatti should have been paid a lot more money than he was when there were guys who were, quote-unquote, better pound for pound, making more money than he was. You know, the guy that the fans liked, the people's choice, was Arturo. And right now, the guys that should be making money are the guys that are doing, some ratings and bringing some people into the stands and make the public care about them.
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more.
Lou, thank you again for coming on Leaving the Ring, brother. It was a pleasure. It's always a pleasure when you come on and stuff. I just tweeted you right now the interview that we did with Davis immediately after his fight and stuff, so if you could check that out. But again, brother, thank you again for coming on.
No, it's my pleasure. It also signifies my lack of a life that I spent an hour and a half on the phone with you guys from 9:20 to 10:50. But it's good talking to people that care and shout out to your listeners for listening. So have a good night, guys.
And what does it say about us that we stay on for 3 hours? So,
okay, no.
I guess we have less of a life.
Less of a life.
I really
have
a good one.
All right, man. Take care.
There you go, Lou DiBella, the promoter of Andre Berto and Sergio Martinez, gets on Leaving the Ring and stuff. And I got to tell you, Lou gets going. He's that little motorboat, man, that you just can't stop.
Ooh.
I'll try to get a word here and there. I thought Red, our publicist, I thought he was bad. No, Lou's a great guy.
It's always good, though. Yeah, no, it's always it's always it's educational. He's a guy that he's an interesting animal because he is on both sides of the fence. He used to be an HBO executive, and he was there during the heyday of the sport of that network. And now he's on the other side as a promoter, and he always gives a really unique perspective because of that. You know, because he understands both ends of it, and he also kind of he benefits too. You know, from Andre Berto and having that guy on the network because of the Al Haymon connection, but also that's a whole other relationship because it's, you know, a lot of times, like he says, the fighter is kind of the boss. And in that case, you know, Berto's boss is Al Haymon. So that's how that works. But it's always just refreshing because he doesn't really pull any punches. You know, he kind of just keeps hitting and keeps hitting. He's like a volume puncher, you know. I mean, it's always, always good to have Lou on. We're running up against the clock. Should I head straight to the fight schedule?
Yeah, you know, and I apologize that we didn't talk a little bit about this past weekend's fights and stuff. But it is what it is. Go ahead, Gabriel, and throw out our fight schedule for this week.
All right, here we go. Starting on Friday night, this is a non-televised, this is a name, at the World Memorial Hall in Osaka, Japan. Uledong Sith Samurai, 35-0-1, versus Kazuto Ioka, 6-0. Talk about a mismatch. This is for the WBC strawweight belt. At the Bell Center, Montreal, Canada, ESPN2, Antonin Dakari, 24-1 versus Shimon Alvarez, 21-3. ESPN's 2 co-feature will be Ionette Ion, 27-1 versus Steve Forbes, 35-8. At the Bally's, Atlantic City, New Jersey, Showtime, Rico Ramos, 18-0 versus Alejandro Valdez, 23-4-3. Underneath that card,
is going to be Eddie Chambers, 35-2, versus Derek Rossi. This is part of the IBF heavyweight elimination tournament that's going on. Derek Rossi is 25-2. Underneath that, Cornelius White, 16-0, versus Donovan George, 21-1. Also, Lennox Allen, a guy that I've been writing a little bit about, super middleweight, out of New York, by way of Guyana, will also be on the card versus the dreaded TBA. Ricardo Williams, 16-2, will be taking on John Brown, 24-18-2. And some of these things, this kind of speaks to the article that I'll be printing on Max Boxing this evening. You're kind of wondering how a 35-0 guy is fighting a 6-0 guy. Well, check out the article. I talk a little bit about how matches are made and why commissions actually okay some of these bouts. At the Sports Center in Fairfield, California, Telefutura, Peter Quillen, 22-0, versus Dennis Sharp, 17-5-3. Underneath that in support, is John Grimaldo, 6-0, versus Alan Sanchez, 6-2-1. Fidel Maldonado will also be on that card, 7-0. And his opponent has actually just been announced, and I'll be talking a little bit about that opponent as well in my article, because the guy is, I believe, 3-5-2, and loser of three consecutive bouts. Kind of a rough matchup there, if you ask me. And then moving along on our televised Showtime or show card, fight card rather, February 12th, Saturday, 2011, at the RWE Rhein-Ruhr and Sporthalle Mülheim, Germany. Wow, say that fast three times. Steve Cunningham, 23-2 versus Inad Lucina, 19-2. This is for the IBF Cruiserweight belt. Underneath that in support in a tune-up fight, Arthur Abraham, 31-2, versus Stepan Bozek, 24-4. This is a non-Super 6 bout. He just felt he needed a little tune-up action, and he's going to get
it. Hey, can't blame him.
If anybody needs a tune-up, I mean, that is a Chevy that needs some work. At the Monte Hermoso, Buenos Aires, Argentina, Omar Narvaez, 32-0-2, versus Jesus Ruiz for the WBA junior bantamweight belt. And at the Coliseo Olympico in Guadalajara, Mexico, of Fox Sports, Marco Antonio Barrera, 67-7, versus Jose Urias, 15-1. And that is your weekend fight schedule. There's plenty more fights going on all around the world, but those are the ones you probably can find a stream for or tune into your local channels.
And remember that USA is cracking down on the people that are doing streams, so cherish it while we still got it. Leave the Ring will be at the Eddie Chambers fight, and will be at the Fairfield fight, which is going to be on Solo Boxeo there. And I got to say, I wanted to talk a little bit about Brian Vera getting his win over the Latin Snake, Sergio Mora. So I tell you what, you can just go back to my tweets and you can see exactly what I thought and how I felt and stuff. Like always, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate everybody that follows us here on In the Ring. If you have not caught wind of our Spanish radio show, our sister radio show, Noche de Boxeo, you got to go over there. The guys are doing a great, great job. They just had Ricardo Mayorga on Monday night, who is dropping a lot of, trash talking, which we already know. That's nothing new. The only thing is that every time you open up that trash can that he opens up, which you call a mouth, the stench always is going to be a little bit different. From him talking about Manny Pacquiao, from Oscar De La Hoya, Miguel Cotto, and Emmanuel Stewart. I was very surprised in that he does not like Manny Stewart. So we did post it up on YouTube. And listen, we get some people that are asking us, are we looking for more writers? Are we looking for more video guys to do things for us? We're always looking at the West Coast. I don't know, but we are looking for Midwest, and we're looking for people up in the East Coast that want to help out Leaving the Ring. It's always appreciated and stuff. We are definitely looking for people, though, to help out our Spanish station, Noche de Boxeo. So if you're looking to get involved, more than welcome to check out what you got to offer and stuff. Again, Gabriel, and everybody else that's tuning in, listening to Leaving the Ring, it's always a pleasure. It's always a great night. It is my fix coming on here and talking 3 hours of boxing here on Leaving the Ring. It's not a sport to us. It's a lifestyle, man.
Well, that's why we sit here for 3 hours and talk boxing. David, as always, really good show. I really enjoyed it. And to our guests and just everybody listening, you know, we're just going to keep trying to bring you as much quality as we can. Try to stay away from the drama. Sorry about the little dust up on Twitter today. It's just kind of sometimes things happen. You try to explain it, and then you realize I've just done 20 tweets in a row in about like 5 minutes. That's not really cool to anybody that follows me, and I apologize for clogging your timeline. I've been trying to keep down on the Twitter wars. I just kind of... This kind of crept up on me, like, wait a minute, I'm in a Twitter war right now. Like, what the hell?
Hey, you know what? I want to clear something up, too, because I was not in the Twitter war. I was actually merely stating something now, okay? I don't go and make videos and bringing up somebody's name because I'm bitter or sour or whatever the point is and stuff like that. And I was pointing something out, and hey, the person, it's not my fault if you got sensitive skin. You know what I mean? Maybe you should have been on Twitter talking or anything else. You know what I'm saying? Anyways, it's a great night. Everybody have a fantastic night, and see you next week here on Leaving the Ring.
Enjoy the fights. Peace.